Messages from the House.
February the 17th, 2005. From the House of Representatives, message number 387, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 235, Liquor License Industry Representative. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 2, noes 57, excused 1. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Message number 389, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 235. The House conferees are Representative R. Anderson, Representative Morgan, and Representative White. Concurrence passed. February 17, 2005, from the House of Representatives. Concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 31, State Parks, Leases, and Concessions. Ayes 59, no 0, excused 1. House Bill number 70, School Audits. Ayes 59, no 0, excused 1. House Bill number 81, Campaign Receipts and Expenditure Reports. Ayes 59, no 0, excused 1. House Bill number 203, Grizzly Bear Relocation Notice. Ayes 59, no 0, excused 1. House Bill number 170, Common Sense Consumption Act. Ayes 54, noes 5, excused 1. And House Bill 207, Livestock Records Confidentiality. Ayes 59, no 0, excused 1. February the 17th, 2005, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 53, Wyoming Cosmetology Act, ayes 59, no 0, excluded one, excused 1. Senate File 68, Unfair Employment Practices Complaint Deadline. Ayes 59, no 0, excused 1. Senate File 21, Governmental Entities Reporting Requirements. Ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. Senate File 83, Volunteer Ambulance Services Immunity. Ayes 51, noes 8, excused 1. Senate File 87, School Buildings Major Maintenance Payments. Ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. February the 17th, 2005, from the House of Representatives. Message number 399, conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 82. The House conferees are Representative Osborne, Chairman, Representatives Harvey and Hassert, Patricia L. Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
We have some concurrences, requests. Message number 393, Senator Basie, are you ready on message number 393?
I almost am.
I am,
Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read in the concurrence request.
February the 17th, 2005, from the House of Representatives, message number 393, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 118, Wyoming Business Ready Community Programs. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, no 0, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia L. Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Bassey.
Mr. President, I would move concurrence on message number 393. This was Senate File 118, the Business Ready Community Program, and I would ask you to vote aye. The House simply added, struck the July 1st and added that allows it upon the immediately upon completion of this. So I'd ask you to vote aye.
Any discussion on the concurrence request? Any discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 118, and you've been asked to vote aye. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Barrasso?
Aye.
Boggs?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Excused.
Excused. Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Geist?
Aye.
Haynes?
Aye.
Hawks?
Aye.
Hines? Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Northrup?
Aye.
Peck?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Vasey?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Larson?
Aye.
Closing vote. Senator Coe. Senator Coe, an aye. Okay. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your votes, you have concurred on Senate File 118. Have a conference committee to appoint message 387, House Bill 235. The conference committee is Senator Peck, Chairman, Senator Job, and Senator Allman. Back to bills on third reading and final passage. Since we did adjourn, I would like the reading clerk to read in one more time, third reading of House Bill 176. It was read in previously, but for the record, we want to make sure everybody knows where we are and what we're talking about.
House Bill 176, Department of Corrections Facility, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to Department of Correction Facilities, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We are on third reading amendment number one. And I would ask the reading clerk once again to read in third reading amendment number one.
House Bill 176, third reading amendment number one, page 3, line 13.
Senator Vasey, would you once more move the amendment?
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment to House Bill 176. This amendment deletes Torrington and adds Rollins.
Thank you. We will not add two times just because we're going back and starting again. So if you have had your second shot, don't be standing up because I won't let you. Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Case.
Mr. President, I've got 50,000 emails from Western Wyoming and Eastern Nebraska telling me that I don't know how many people are in Morrill. And they are right, Mr. President. There are 957 people in Morrill. And if you look on the handout I made earlier, I copied the same number that I had for Torrington, and I apologize for that error. Mr. President, that being said, you know, this is, it's a very open environment here. People live in Scotts Bluff. They have hay fields and raise crops in Wyoming. Lots of people work in one county and live in the other. It's a fluid environment. It's really one economy. And I can appreciate when they do economic development in the region, they draw on the strengths of both sides of the border. I would do exactly that. But I guess that's exactly the reason that I think we should try to provide the best value for the state by trying to keep the economic benefits of this project in the state. And I love Torrington. Truly, I do. Morrill's too small for me to like it all.
Further discussion on the amendment for anyone who has not had their second time. Further discussion. Senator Vasey, for your second time.
Mr. Chairman, for my final time, I hope forever. Mr. Chairman, I guess as a young man, I never quite understood Shakespeare's Macbeth and why the king went goofy, but as an older man, I do. You know, I guess that I've been a player in this tragedy for 13 years. It started back with Lovell, and it has been a tragedy. It's been tragic for people involved, and I don't know, and I'm as guilty as anyone, I don't know where we ever got this idea that to put human beings in a cage for punishment could be confused with economic development. But that's kind of where we went. Mr. President, in my final little moment here, I'd ask for you to reach in your pocket or your purse and pull out some pocket change or a dollar bill or 20 or whatever you have and kind of hold it in your hand. Mr. President, this is your money now, and you're going to spend it right now, and you've got two choices. Torrington has eloquently, hard-working, laid out all their facts. The good senator from Goshen County and many of his friends have told me the error of my ways. On the other hand, we have Rollins, and I hope they provided honest and legitimate concerns about putting a prison where the Constitution said a prison would go. So this is your money, and now you make the choice, and you have two choices here, and where would you put your money? Thank you, and I call, ask for the question.
The question being called for, the yeas and nays having been called for, the chief clerk will call a roll on House Bill 176, third reading amendment number 1.
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
No.
Barrasso?
No.
Boggs?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper? DeCaria?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Haynes?
No.
Cox?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Northrup?
Aye.
Peck?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Larson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing?
Peck, aye to no.
Peck, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 12 ayes, 18 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 1 has failed to pass. Third reading amendment number 2. The reading clerk will read the amendment.
House Bill 176, third reading amendment number 2, page 1, line 4.
The Mockler amendment, Senator Mockler.
I'd like to move Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 176, and ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. Now that we've decided where this prison is going to be, I think we need to assure the taxpayers that we're doing this in the most appropriate way in safeguarding their tax dollars. And whether it's true or not, in a lot of the debate and a lot of the materials that have been handed out, one of the things that you've seen is that we're going to be paying 4 times the appraised value for the land. And that seems a little high to me, that when I've talked to people in the land appraisal business and the appraisal business, you know, sometimes if you're really speculating and you know that that land is going to be way more valuable, you'll pay a couple times the value of the land. But rarely, especially if it's for a specific use, do you pay more than really what the appraisal itself is. And banks have a hard time loaning you money for more than the appraised value of a piece of land. So what I'm actually asking, and I know this will get confusing because from my understanding, and maybe I can be corrected, that the land is being purchased, the ranch is being purchased by the local economic development organization, whom I'm assuming will then sell it back to the state. So we may not still get the best value for this land. But I think in any case where the state is going to go out and purchase land, we need to make sure that we're getting a very good deal, that we're getting a very fair deal. And so what it says is that we won't buy this land for more than 1.5 times the appraisal value.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, a little history in the situation of this particular piece of property. Several years ago, if you recall on the floor, I mentioned that there were some private prison companies that wanted to come to Goshen County to build a prison. And they went directly to this individual and they asked him, now this is a place where we would like to build a prison if we get the nod from the state to build a private prison. He said, how much do you want for it? And he said, well, I sold some land to the railroad that they use for industrial purposes, and I sold that land for $1,500. You're going to use this for industrial purposes. I think that's a reasonable price, and I'll sell it to you for $1,500. And it is faster land, Mr. President. However, when you change the use to industrial land and you change the zoning would have to go to the county commissioners and would have to be changed to industrial. Then the price of that land is no longer, or that land is no longer pasture land, it's industrial, and it's zoned industrial. So if we pass this, Mr. President, the net effect is that rather than the purchase of the land occurring as pasture land, it will occur as industrial land, and it will occur at the price in which a willing seller and a willing buyer wanted to exchange that land, and that price was $1,500. And was offered by a private prison company. So, from one way or the other, Mr. President, if the amendment passes, I think the net effect is that to the state it'll still cost $1,500. It'll still be in that particular area because it'll be zoned industrial. That's what the willing seller, willing price is.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, on the amendment, do we do this any other place in state government? Do we have directives for the School Facilities Commission when they go in and purchase a piece of property for a new school? Do we have directives to do this if we want to buy a building down the street down here? I guess I'd have those questions of the sponsor to try to explain to me, and then I'd like to know when we talk about limiting the purchase price of prison property in the first part of the amendment, limit that to what?
Further discussion on the amendment before the sponsor takes her second term. Senator Vasey.
Just briefly, I'm always confused on state land and private land. If somebody could tell me when it's okay to add to the state land inventory and when it's not, I get lost in that one. Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment before the sponsor has her second term. Further discussion. Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I just look at this as a way to sort of safeguard the state. We just bought a building a little tiny west of the Capitol. And we paid way too much for that building because they knew that the best buyer was going to be the state, that we desperately wanted it. So we did pay more than 1.5 the cost of that building. And I think that was inappropriate. And I guess my concern here is whenever you get the state, who's just spent a lot of time debating this and is determined that we're going to put this prison in a certain place, or the prison or a university or a state hospital or any other state facility, once you make that decision, that property value begins to skyrocket. And I don't think that that's fair to the state. You know, we talk a lot about buying land, and we certainly had a lot of discussions even on the Wildlife Trust Fund that we don't even want to own any more land. So it would seem to me that, you know, as I said, I think that part of the thing that will come into play here is that we're just going to have a transfer and that the last appraisal will be for what that price was. But long term, I think as they look at adding to it, et cetera, what we're just trying to do is safeguard a little bit of our money so that there isn't any price gouging. If there's not any price gouging, this amendment doesn't mean anything. If there is price gouging and people are trying to figure out ways to make a little bit of extra money off their pasture land before it's zoned for commercial or industrial, then I think that this might be kind of important to have in place.
Further discussion on the amendment. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 176 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. Third reading amendment number 3. The reading clerk will read the amendment.
House Bill number 176, third reading amendment number 3, page 1, line 4.
Mockler amendment also. Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 176 and ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. When I first was elected to the legislature over there in the House, we spent a lot of time talking about takings. And there were a lot of government regulations and government actions that were actually devaluing people's property. And it was a real concern, and I think it probably still is a real concern. And I don't think that this case is any different. I know we all got emails from people who are not happy that they're going to be living right next door to a prison. And whether it's true or not, when you look through the handbooks that have been given out in support of this site, one of the things they say is that this is going to increase your property values. It's going to increase your rentals in town and your houses in town, and it's really going to be a benefit to the community. My concern is about the people that are living right by the prison. The 2 to 3 miles, really, and I've limited it to 3 miles within the prison site area. And what I'm trying to do is to say that if they want out, after this prison's built and the construction is completed and they have a farm or a home that is right by this prison, and they can demonstrate that the value of their home is significantly less than before the prison, and you do that by looking at your county assessor's rolls, you'll have, you know, your property tax that will be paid at the completion of the prison, and then in that 2-year period after the completion and then 3 years to get the paperwork done, if you can come back in and you've sold your home, you've said you just don't want to live next door to a prison, that the difference in that value, if that value is less, the Department of Corrections, i.e. the state, will make up. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that you, one of the concerns obviously is that right now most of it's ag land, and ag land doesn't have much value in the state of Wyoming as it looks on our assessor's rolls, but really they still have homes there. And there are going to be people who really are not going to be comfortable living this close to a prison. And I think that we need to get for them some opportunity and some way to get out. And so the amendment essentially says that if you're within 3 miles, you have 2 years, if you sell your house within 2 years of the completion of the prison, and the value has dropped, we will pay the difference in the value on your assessment or on your appraisal. And I think that that's fair. If everybody's right and this makes everybody's property more valuable because they'll be putting apartments in and rezoning it and having commercial development around it, you're going to benefit. But if you don't benefit in that first little period of time where you just don't want to be there, I think that maybe we owe them for taking away the value of their property.
Further discussion on the amendment. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I have a couple concerns about this amendment. Part of its lines 19 and 20, the property assessment, that assessment is going to be on ag value. We just heard it's industrial. We're going to really skew the figures doing that. The other thing that I find disconcerting is, you know, when is the prison finally completed? It's going to take a couple years, and then is it when it's fully filled up? You know, it's pretty wide open. I urge you to resist this amendment.
Senator Haynes.
Mr. President, corrections studies have shown that prices probably will drop for a couple of years after the prison construction begins. And then after that, the price of the land or the value of the land will increase. And in many cases, it will go up and exceed the value before the prison came to town. Some of the reasons for that are that the land then becomes available for different uses than it was before. Perhaps inexpensive housing, perhaps commercial development. So that could be an increase. Two things that really bother me about this amendment, Mr. President. One is that the Department of Corrections has no stake in this, has no dog in this fight at all. They're just supposed to stand by with a checkbook ready and pen in hand and write a check to somebody. The second objection I have is that it sounds to me like a situation like this is ripe for some gaming. And I just kind of hate to see something like that come along where we really don't need it. The market, I think, is going to treat the property owners kindly. Let's let the market forces work. I would rise on and against the amendment.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, I have the same argument I had before. I don't say this derogatorily, but we built a parking garage across the street, which we all had a great stake in. I'm not sure the neighbors wouldn't like to come back and get some of their money back if they sold their house and say their house isn't worth as much since we built that gorgeous parking garage. So I have real concerns if the state finds itself going down this road. Same argument I had before.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes her second time. Further discussion. Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, the values of the homes around the Capitol have increased greatly with the parking lot, because now you can park in front of your house. And it was a very attractive site. And I'm not trying to say that. I mean, I looked at the reports. They said that this land will get rezoned and it'll be more valuable. And everybody that wants to not live by a prison and give up their family farm that they've lived on for 100 years can sell it out for apartments and they'll all be happy. But if they don't want to do that, if they want to leave and not have to worry about that and not go through that stress and not go through the agony of living someplace and watching someplace you've lived for years value just decline because of a state institution, I think we owe it some way to compensate them. With respect to the Department of Corrections not having a dog in this fight, well, this looks like a pretty big dog to me, kind of like a Neapolitan. But anyway, I guess my concern is that all you're doing is that they would come to the state of Wyoming, they'd come to the Appropriations Committee, they'd say, we owe 17 homeowners $20,000 each. And now, is this going to happen? Who knows? But don't you think that if you had this happen to you, you would be very resentful of the state of Wyoming for lowering the value of your property, changing your life, your lifestyle, and essentially saying, you know, take it or leave it. You can live next to a prison and operate your farm, or you can just, we'll let you get out. We've lowered your value. You can move on. Or, you know, the respect to the gaming. Some people are going to sit on those places, and they're going to hope to God it does raise their value, and then they're going to get out. But that's up to them. I'm just really concerned about the people that lose value, that really don't want to be here, that have lost value and would like to move on.
The question is, House Bill 76, third reading, amendment number 3. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. Back on the bill. House Bill 176, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Barrasso?
Aye.
Boggs?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Haynes?
Aye.
Hawks?
Aye.
Hines? Aye. Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Northrup?
Aye.
Peck?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Vasey?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Larson?
Aye.
Closing votes? Closing. Vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
House Bill 176, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 176 has passed the Senate. Mr. Vice President, would you approach the desk? House Bill 291, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 291, Office of State Lands and Investments, sponsored by the Council, an act related to administration of government. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I ask that this be taken off the consent list because I think we should think about it a little bit. We're about to we go back and forth so much in this body, you forget which side we're on. But I think this isn't the direction we want to go. We've had a lot of state land directors in the last few years, and I think the majority of them have said publicly even that they don't think this is the way we should go, that they have real concerns that taking the job, you know, finding the person that will even want to take the job will be difficult. And secondly, working for five bosses isn't easy. And not that you don't work for five bosses when it's a commission, but you actually are accountable to one for your actual everyday administrative actions. One thing the Constitution does say about the governor's office is that he is the chief executive officer of the state of Wyoming. He is where all the blame lands, even for a lot of the stuff we do. He is the person that is most accountable for the decisions and the directions that this state takes. It's a land board, it's a commission, there's a Game and Fish Commission, a Highway Commission. He's even responsible for what those people do. So I think what you need is you need to make sure that he's comfortable with the people that he appoints to some of these to these positions. And this one probably as specifically as any. He is the chairman of the land board, of this LIB board, by just virtue of his position as chief executive officer, he's in charge. So I think this is one that we should move forward. This kind of came out of a lot of political and partisan wrangling that ended up into a study that became less political and less partisan. But I don't think we ever really articulated the real reasons why this would be a good idea. I think the evidence was there from the former directors, from the current director, that this will make this an even more difficult position to fill with competent people who are willing to devote the time and energy that we expect of a political appointment. And I think we should reject the bill.
Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I would submit to you that testimony in committee, the last director of state lands, or one of the last, did favor the bill because it was almost unworkable for him under the old regime where he was instructed by all the elected officials to do something, and then the governor would say, no, don't do it. It made it almost untenable. In fact, through that particular organization, I think we went through four or five state land directors who couldn't work under those situations. I'm getting some indication it was six or seven. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think it is the right thing to do. We mentioned the Highway Commission. They worked for seven of them in there. They worked for seven under those. Almost all corporate structures are just this way. Almost all corporate structures are just this way. Now, the Highway Commission is appointed by the governor out of three that are selected by the commission. But they still go and work for the commission. I would suggest to you that this is the proper way to have it, to where one member of a board cannot, by controlling all of the personnel, dictate to all the other members who have the responsibility of the state land. They have the responsibility. You cannot expect them to have the responsibility if they have no say over the personnel. I think this is a good bill. I believe it's time that we pass it.
House Bill 291 having been read three separate times, the question is, Shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Almond.
Aye.
Barrasso.
Aye.
Boggs.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
No.
Geis.
No.
Haynes.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Job.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Massey.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Mockler.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Peck.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
No.
Sessions.
No.
Townsend.
No.
Vacy.
No.
Von Flaittern.
No.
President Larson. Closing vote. Vote closed, 17 ayes, 13 noes.
House Bill 291, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the member elected to the Senate, House Bill 291 has passed the Senate. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Vice President, I move the Senate resolve itself in committee of the whole.
Senator Haynes. Excuse me. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. Senator Haynes.
Committee of the whole, please come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 155. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 155, Uniform Management of Public Employees Retirement Account, sponsored by Representative Pedersen. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Hawks, Mockler, and Peck. Conflict, Senator Almond, Senator Peck, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Peck.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 232, Economic Development. Uniform Management of Public Employees Retirement Act. And for an explanation of the bill, I'd like to yield to Senator Ross.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you House Bill 155, Uniform Management of Public Employees Retirement Act. This bill is a recommendation from NACUSL, National Conference of Uniform Commissioners on Uniform Laws. In essence, what this bill does is do the same thing for public employees' retirement as we already have in law for private retirement plans. Those are covered by a federal law called ERISA. Provisions of ERISA cover private sector employee benefit plans, and in general, those plans are established, ERISA does not cover plans that are established and maintained by governmental entities for their employees. This will implement best practices for management of the state retirement funds in the state of Wyoming. It will codify and bring into law that which is primarily already being done at this time by our retirement board. And I must say that the testimony in committee has been that the retirement board is doing a very good job in investing our employees' retirement plan monies. In the last couple of years, they have done pretty well, about 12% on the investments Unfortunately, prior to the last couple of years, they didn't do so well, but nobody's plans did well. We had 9/11 that occurred and a downturn in the market. This bill has been adopted in 16 states, including our neighbors. This Uniform Act was adopted by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws in 1997. It is a bill that will codify prudent investor rules and adopt the theory of that these assets will be held in trust. As a result of that being held in trust, you impose upon a trustee fiduciary duties. That's the highest duties that can be imposed upon the trustee and the money managers. Currently, they employ 13 different money managers. And they will implement, and it codifies, a modern portfolio theory. So if you look at the bill, you will see that pages 1 through 9 of the bill are definitions. On page 12, we have section 93436, page 13, 93437, page 14, 438, page 15, 439. These all deal with the issue concerning assets being held in trust. A trustee has a high fiduciary responsibility to maintain these funds, to use care, loyalty, and utmost good faith on behalf of the beneficiaries of the fund. The prudent investment rules of this bill are contained in sections 440, 441, and 442. Those are pages 16, 17, 19 and 20 of the bill. What are the prudent investment rules? This Uniform Act requires an articulation of prudent investment rules. It will be a codification of how the Retirement Board is operating right now based on a smattering of statutes and common law. It'll bring it into one place. It'll provide uniformity not only for our state, but it will also provide uniformity throughout the nation. Page 21 deals with trustee liability. This act imposes upon a trustee or other fiduciary liability, personal liability, for any loss made through the use of the trust assets. There can be no agreement that exonerates a trustee or a fiduciary from liability. However, the retirement system or the fiduciary may insure against such losses, and that's exactly what they do now. An important part of the bill is pages 22, 23, 25 through 27, 28, over to 31 and 35, which require certain disclosures be made with regard to the actuarial soundness of the retirement plan. It requires three disclosures. The first disclosure is what is entitled a summary plan description. And the summary plan description must be sent out. It is a brief disclosure of the benefits of the plan and how one qualifies for benefits and how a member may become disqualified. Updates if the plan is changed must also be sent out. In addition, there must be an annual disclosure report, and this report discloses the financial and actuarial status in detail of the plan. Finally, there must be an annual report, and that report must be published, and the annual report is a brief summary of the annual of an annual disclosure of the financial and actuarial status of the plan. All three of these disclosures must be made available at the retirement system's principal offices for public inspection. With regard to enforcement, that is on page 36 of the bill, section 9-3-451. A public employer or participant, beneficiary or fiduciary may bring an equitable action in court for relief for violation of this law. The agency may also bring injunctive relief if it deems necessary if there is a violation of the law. Conclusion, Uniform Management of Public Employees Retirement System Act will provide for improved investment returns for public employee retirement systems, and it will guarantee important information to be made public to the employers, trustees, and participants about the administration of this act. There are two things that I do want to point out to you on page 37 of the bill. Section 2 requires a review and a report. The retirement system shall review the provisions of this act in conjunction with the current law and make a comparison of that, and shall report that to the Joint Appropriations Committee as a result of their findings on or before October 1st of 2005. So that's the first effective date. The second effective date is then after that, this whole act would then go into effect, or would be effective, well, Section 2 is effective immediately, excuse me, and then the remainder, after they've done this report, becomes effective on page 38 on July 1, 2006. I commend this bill to your for your approval. I think it'll do good things for our plan. I do wish to also tell you that the retirement board is neutral on this, because they already are doing some of this, are doing this, and they're doing a fine job. They would this will just simply codify what they are doing and bring us into a more applicable statutory system where you would be able to go and check and know exactly what's going on with the retirement benefits. So I urge your favorable consideration. I'll stand for any questions.
Any discussion on the bill? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. At the last part of it, you said that you would take this now if it passes and then compare it to the statutes that exist. But how much comparison or how much work did you do with the retirement board before this was put together, and how much communication did you have with them? I looked through this. I don't. And another question, maybe you won't know this till you sit and compare those statutes, but what would change? You know, what? Give me a level of comfort that this is just not going to make people on that board uncomfortable and not really competent enough to do their job.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to that, the testimony in front of the committee was that the retirement board, which is an 11-member board, would probably meet, and they would appoint a subcommittee to review that, and it would probably consist of your main individuals that run the retirement board. They indicated, at least in testimony before the committee, that they didn't believe that that would be an undaunting task and would be able to do that by way of a subcommittee and then make that report to the Joint Appropriations Committee. That's the best I can tell you. I will tell you that this is not an area of my expertise, but it is an area of expertise of the prime sponsor of this bill, who is a new House member in the House, and would urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still trying to grasp why we need this. Through the testimony that was just given, we have a very good system that works well now, and that all the safeguards and laws are in place, even if they are scattered throughout the statute books. So I'm not sure why we need this, and kind of operating from the principle that if it's not broke, why fix it? So That's one of the concerns here. And I'm starting to get concerns about all the uniform acts that we're buying into, that just because other states have bought into it, it's called a uniform act, that we should do that. And sometimes I'll see the benefits of doing that. If there's some cooperation with other states, that would benefit us in some way, like some of the ones that have come through here. But I really don't see it with this one. And finally, those last two pages do raise the question of what we're doing here is putting it in the statutes. Then we're going to ask the retirement system to take a look at this and see if it works for them, and then we're going to implement it. Why don't we just simply have the retirement board take a look at this, report to the Joint Appropriations Committee, have the Appropriations Committee work with the retirement board, and then bring us back something that really would work for Wyoming rather than doing it this way.
Further discussion? Senator Peck.
Mr. Chairman, the Senate Revenue Committee heard the bill and had these very same questions asked, and the representative from the retirement board was there. He assured us that they had the capability of doing the required analysis and reporting. He probably said they were neutral on the bill. They acknowledged, as the representative presented the bill, that there were certain refinements and clarifications that would be of benefit. And while he said they were neutral, I had the impression that there could be some improvement by the adoption of this Uniform Act.
Further discussion? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, being a recipient of the investment practices of this board, and I'll have to tell you, I've got better raises from the investment practices of this board than I ever got when I was teaching school per year, I might add, larger percentages. But why, I don't, tell me why I want to do this. Tell me why I should vote for this when I thought that we had a structure in place. We have the finest retirement system in the nation, I mean, one of the finest in the nation. We've done that. As far as the educational part of it goes, we've compared it state by state by state. Somebody must be doing something right. Some procedures must be in place that are working, because a lot of, you know, other educators in different parts in other states are very envious of our retirement system. And so, you know, tell me why I ought to do this if there's nothing there that makes it, that I can be sure that it will be beneficial to do it and not just something else to put into statute.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I will do my best to try to answer this. I mean, I am not here to tell you that the retirement system is broken. It's not. We're doing a good job. But what you have is you have a smattering of laws around, and you have common law out there. And this is a way in which we will have a codification, a central place where all of our statutes are together. It brings in best practices, modern theories of investment, all of that into our current statutes. In addition, what I think it does bring to us is the disclosures. The required disclosures that I went through with you will be are very defined in this. There are three separate disclosures, as I suggested to you. It's a better way of communicating with your retirees. It's a better way of having codification and knowing what your rights are. You know, the question was raised in committee, is this just a make work bill for the retirement board? Ultimately, I believe the testimony was, as I heard it, and I think as the good chairman has spoke, that this wasn't an undue burden on them, and that they could that in many respects it did modernize the law. Is it going to enhance our investments? Well, some of those things are out of our control. I think it really depends on the economy and how we move forward, and events that sometimes we don't have any control over. However, I do believe that it does embody all of those current prudent investor rules that we require the very same statutory structure in ERISA for private in retirement plans. This will do the same thing for public employee retirement plans.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And once again, my primary point, if the Appropriations Committee really wants to have this study done, and they're noted in the bill now, why not ask the Retirement Board to look at this Uniform Act, come back with them with some recommendations, and then come back in the special session with the bill and have it implemented, and it would start in July 1st of 2006, just like we're wanting to do here.
Any further discussion? Senator Ross.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, that's a policy decision for this body. I mean, if you decide that that's the way you want to go, I would urge you to not do that, to consider the statutory components that are here and to implement the Act for all of the reasons that I previously stated. I think it once again embodies best practices, modern prudent investment theory rules, the modern portfolio kinds of things that are in here. And I think ultimately a clear definition of how these assets are held in a trusteeship, which imposes fiduciary duties, clearly defined, clearly set out legal duties and rights of recourse. I believe that having said that, it's better. This language was put in to provide everybody with a comfort in page 37 and 38. I was warned by the good senator from Natrona County that I should not say that this was a Uniform Act, but there was no way I could get around it. So, but the fact of the matter is, I think it is a good idea, and it is a way to embody modern investment practices and theory.
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was debating on whether I wanted to stand up and speak on this one, but as liaison for the Wyoming Retirement System Board, I do want to weigh in on this because the system is not broken. That group is very, very responsible, and they get very good returns on their investments, and I think their disclosures are frequent and accurate, and anytime as a beneficiary, if you have a question or a member of that system, they get back to you with in a very timely manner. So having said that, I think I object to this bill based on process. And when we talk about Uniform Acts, and I've been on Revenue Committee and I've been on Judiciary Committee, when we've dealt with Uniform Acts, the agency affected is usually a very big part of that process. And I'm in contact with the retirement system and also their legislative committee, and I know that they were not part of this process in developing this bill or bringing this forward. I'm not sure. They said they are neutral, and that's probably true. They can probably work with it if it passes. I'm just thinking that our process is a little backwards here, and I think they should be involved. And if it is a good bill, they have the year to look it over, which the bill says they would do anyway. And then they could come to us with the changes, and then we could enact it. But I do think, because they do a good job, they deserve to be part of this process ahead of the game and not on the end. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question. I'm not clear. We've been talking in terms of the state retirement system and its effects on the state retirement system. I'm not clear to what extent this applies to other public retirement systems in the state and to what extent there are other public system retirement systems in the state, because I think it may be important that we do have good laws governing them. You know, I have some confidence currently in our state retirement system, and I just don't know about the other ones.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we do have a lot of questions, but I do know one thing, that if we do pass this through, and it doesn't really take effect in 2006 as far as the remainder of the act, and we're going to get a report back, it's going to give everybody a whole year to figure out how this is going to affect them. And so they'll have a chance to really study it and come back next year if there's places where they feel there needs to be a change, or if they feel that the enacting clause needs to just be deleted out of the act, we'll know. So I think this is probably the right way to do a bill that's as complicated as this, and as far as the effect of the people that it's going to take its toll on or benefit. Question?
Further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Peck's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 155 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The bill is passed. Division having been called for, will all those in favor please stand? All those opposed?
Seven, no.
House Bill 155 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 228. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 228, School Finance Model Recalibration, sponsored by Wasserberger, an act relating to school finances. It was referred to Committee number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Boggs, Coe, Jennings, Peck, and Townsend, Senator Coe, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Case, Hines, and Job, excuse Senator Nicholas, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 228. Members of the Senate, House Bill 228, and there is a standing committee amendment. I think I'll wait till I'm done explaining the bill and have the good chairman from Appropriations move that. But House Bill 228 is the bill that creates and funds the recalibration process that we're getting ready to enter into with education finance. As members of the Senate might or might not know, we are directed to do that every 5 years. This goes into the model. Basically, if I was going to describe what recalibration is, and we had a meeting yesterday with the new consultants who I'll talk about. If I was going to describe recalibration, my definition is to go back into the model and look at the different components of the model that are within the confines of the model, and reevaluate those components and update the value of those components as it relates to the block grant funding that this legislature uses when we fund all 48 school districts. Understanding that there's different costs associated with the schools in Lusk compared to the schools in Jackson or the schools in Cody or Sundance. What this bill does is create the select committee that will be involved in that process and dictates how that happens and funds it. Now, for the good majority floor leader from AC, this is one of those education bills that has a little more significance to it. You know, I made the comment, if it doesn't have a couple million bucks in it, it's not anything with education. I can tell you this has a couple of million bucks in it. So looking at the bill, bottom of page 1, section 1 creates the select committee on school finance recalibration. If you go over to Page two, paragraph little I. Five members of the Wyoming Senate appointed by the president, one of whom shall be the chairman of the Senate Education Committee. So it looks like I can't avoid this deal. And one a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Paragraph two, little I. Five members from the Wyoming House of Representatives appointed by the speaker. One the chairman of House Education, one from House Appropriations. Paragraph B talks about the job of the select committee. And I'll just read this because I think it says it pretty well. It says, recalibrate the education resource block grant model in accordance with Wyoming Statute 2113-309-T to determine if modifications are necessary to ensure the model remains cost-based in light of changing conditions and modifications to law, and shall administer the contract with professional consultants to the legislature for model recalibration as approved by the Management Council. We had an independent group of which the president was a member, the speaker, the chairman from House Education. I wasn't able to attend, so the good senator from Fremont County, from Riverton, sat in for me. And we chose the firm of Pikus. It looks like Odom, but the name is really pronounced Autumn, like odd. We met with them, as a matter of fact, just yesterday, again, and started the process of trying to enter into recalibration, how we were going to proceed, and we decided pretty much that we'll start our meetings probably in April. You'll see at the bottom of page two, the report will be provided to the legislature in sufficient time for consideration during the 2006 budget session. We also talk about something that happens occasionally. The select committee may introduce legislation as if they were another committee of the legislature. Top of page three, we elect a chairman. Paragraph D starts the appropriations process in the bill. That talks about a $50,000 appropriation to the LSO for the expenses of the select committee as it does its work. Section two is the appropriations directly to LSO for the recalibration process. That's $760,000. Bottom of page three, section three, something that I hate to see in there, but I think we have to have it in there, is $500,000 appropriated from the school foundation program through the AG's office for continuing school finance litigation. Going over to section four on page four, $973,586 appropriated to the Department of Education directly to improve the quality and availability of data. Now, just some thoughts on the data part of this whole process. And you probably remember we had, House Bill 70 on school audits, I believe went through here, where we hired some more and gave them some more auditors. The recalibration process is only going to be as good as the data we're able to accumulate so that we can make the decisions from a policy perspective after the consultants bring their recommendations to us. Basically, in Section 4, it talks about the department providing support to the districts out there. And I'm sure when we talk about the standing committee amendment, the good chairman from Appropriations might have some comments on this particular section. Bottom of page 4, little I, modify rules and policy for the recalibration process. Over on page 5, paragraph 2, little I, the compliance procedures for districts that's going to be required. Paragraph 3, little I, establish and validate data that comes in. Paragraph B, you'll see that the department has authorized 5 additional full-time positions to implement sections A of this section. We'll discuss that in the standing committee amendment because there were some changes made. Section 5, the effective date of this act, and ending June 30th, 2006. you know, this is the recalibration bill. It's a very, very important bill as we start the process of going into the model and analyzing, particularly, I think, as directed by the courts, the cost-based nature of the funding model. And we've had some of that discussion already when we talk about the different components. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the standing committee amendment from committee number two.
We have a standing committee amendment. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that the amendment be read in.
House Bill number 228, standing committee amendment number one to engrossed copy, page 5, line 8.
Mr. Chairman, I move that standing committee amendment number one to House Bill 228 be passed and that we dispense with the rest of the reading of the amendment. What the Appropriation Committee did in this amendment was we did not change any of the money. We realize how important this issue is in coming up, and I believe within the bill it calls for most of the work to be done and reported back for our 2006 budget session. So what we did then on page 5 on line 8, we changed the additional 5 full-time positions that was requested to AWAC positions, and we also time limited them so they would terminate effective June 30th, 2006. And our reasoning, of course, was that this project is supposed to be done within a year. We wanted to give them the employees they needed, the money they needed, but we didn't. We wasn't convinced that it needed to be on ongoing 5 employees. If this is necessary in the reappropriation, I mean in the recalibration, then they can come up with their line items in next year budget. So I ask you to support this amendment.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I realize that you know, we have great employees over there at the Department of Education, and we're beginning to find out just exactly what they're worth, but I need to question this a little bit. 5 employees, and I'm terrible at math, but that comes out to $194,000 and some change per employee. Somebody tell me what they're going to be doing that they're worth $194,000 a pop for those 5 employees.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, these employees, of course, comes out of Section 4, and they, in that section, as you noticed, they have a request for $973,000, and so we have asked for that to be broke down into the budget, into our budget, so we can understand it. As of yet, I have not received that.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I was somewhat aware of that, and I find it strange that a bill can go through the other side of this building and wind up over in this building, and for some reason we can't seem to get information out of that department. It seems to me that timeliness is right up there, probably just below correct figures, and if an agency can't respond in the time it takes a bill to go through and wind up here on the floor at Committee of the Whole, then I think there's something truly wrong, particularly when the figures are as outrageous as $194,000 per employee.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer as best I can. But the breakdown I had in Section 4, Year 1, which is fiscal year 05, and of course we're into that. So this talks about 5 positions. We funded at 25%. It talks about $79,217. One contract position, 42.5, 50%. Total $121,717 for fiscal year 05. Fiscal year 06 is funded at 100%. They show 5 positions at $316,869. at 100%, one contract at $85,000. So the annual recurring is $401,869. I'm just going by the numbers they gave me. Mr. Chairman, just a minute, let me read my note here. Yeah, $500,000 is for the consultants for the districts, and I showed that at 450 on the sheet, but the total staff is 523,586. RFP 450, the grand total 973,586. And Mr. Chairman, I will make sure and have distributed before second reading, for the benefit of the majority floor leader, a complete breakdown of everything that we see here, and hopefully bring that on second reading.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I can do this since I'm not on the Education Committee anymore. So I'm going to ask these questions. In the type of employees to be hired, I was on the data committee that we formed for 2 years and sat in those meetings for a long time, quite a few days, I might add. I thought things were going along really pretty good. But the question I have in sitting in those meetings and listening to those data experts coming to realize what really is needed within districts, some of it's hardware, some of it's software, and so forth, and I had understood, you know, this was working, going forward, working, whatever. But what I'm questioning, what kind of expertise, if we're going to do at-will employees, which I have no problem with that, but I want to know what kind of people we're going to hire. You know, those people that can go in on that data stuff, as I sat there and listened for 2 years worth of meetings with the experts in those systems around the state, that's a pretty specialized area. Where are we going to, you know, tell me how you're going to hire, or tell me what kind of a person you need to do this. And then with consultants that this was brought up, tell me what consultants, tell me where they're going to come from. If there are data people within our districts, I'll tell you what, just come right out and say it. If you want to, those data experts in our districts, and I'll name some names, Mark Mathern in Casper, our person who runs our stuff here, those guys are the ones that know those systems. If we want to come out and say we're going to give them a stipend or whatever to work all through the summer and extra hours on weekends and through the evenings and stuff, then fine, let's come out and say it. They're the ones that know those systems. But just tell me the kind of people we're going to hire so that we know what's going to happen with this.
Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to bring back a better answer to that, but I can tell you one of the problems that exist out there, because we have a whole bunch of really small districts out there that are really kind of like one-man shows. And what we have to have, we have to go out and almost like pull it out of the districts, make sure we have uniform information from every district out there that will feed into the process we're undertaking here so that we can make good recommendations. But I will bring a lot more information back to the body on second reading, and I appreciate the question from the good senator from Laramie County.
Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, let's go ahead and vote on the amendment then. All those in favor of the standing amendment number one signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any discussion on the bill? Senator Larson, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In working with the consultants that we're hiring there, I've had a lot of people ask me, what is recalibration? A lot of people, and I would say particularly some of the newer members, really don't understand what recalibration is. Some people have said they think that it's going to be, and I'm just going to use a hypothetical dollar figure, which what we're doing is much higher than that. Let's assume that we're giving $100 million to schools now. There are those who thought recalibration means we're going to take that same $100 million and just go through and readjust the components and come out with the same amount of money. That's not what recalibration is. Recalibration will go into the components of the model, determine if they're being funded properly. Some may be funded at a higher level. Some may be at too low a level. all of those components within there will be reevaluated to see if they are being funded on a cost-based method. So it isn't just a matter of finding a different way to divvy up the pie. If it takes more money, it's going to come out and say it takes more money to meet those goals. Remember, much of what is in the model is funded at 100%. That will also be looked at, but as yet, I don't think anybody has come up with a better way to fund most of those things that are funded at 100%. But it isn't just a matter of finding a different way to divvy up the same money. Those that are funded may be too high, could see a cut, but the majority are probably going to say that they've been funded at too low a level. Therefore, it will take more money to probably do that. But I wanted to make sure that particularly some of the new members have asked me, is all we're going to do is go in and divvy up the same amount of money in a different way? And the answer to that is no. It will be going back to look at to see if the components within the model are sufficiently funded to be cost-based. And that's what recalibration basically is.
Senator Jobe.
Chairman, I have a question. When we look at the recalibration, not only are we only going to look at present components, or will we look at some of the add-ons we have now, like full-day kindergarten and summer school?
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, the body, if they'll remember, we passed out Senate File 47 that has in it 6.2 million for full day kindergarten, has 4.5 million for summer schools. That's all going to be part of the recalibration process as we look at that. I can't totally tell you where that will go. You know, honestly, there are some districts out there that still aren't using full day kindergarten and haven't come into the fold. But I got to be honest with you and tell you that we're going to fund full day kindergarten everywhere in the state here before much longer. And if you look at that number, it goes from 6.2 million up pretty close to 30 million. So we will be looking at that. But I just wanted to say something about recalibration and, you know, why I think it's very beneficial to what we do, because we've had great debates on the floor talking about the money in the school foundation program. And, you know, I had that bill that went down, and, you know, we're going to talk about salaries tomorrow. But I think we as a legislature owe it to ourselves to insist on recalibration. We owe it to ourselves with the amount of money that we're putting into education. We have increased education funding in this state, depending on who you look at or listen to, well over 55%. We're going to be over $10,000 per ADM easy without talking about the salaries after Senate File 47. So recalibration, I think, you know, we owe it to ourselves to know what things are costing, how they are funded. There's an awful lot of money being spent out there, and I think the, you know, the recalibration process brings it all into perspective in my way of thinking, so that we all can understand it better, know if we're being fair, and if we aren't, let's look at it. So I hope that answers your question.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just one thing. You know, it said we got to recalibrate to be, continue to be cost-based. And that's the legal fiction we're operating under. But, Mr. Chairman, we need to understand that's a fiction. The model that of the world that the Supreme Court decision is based on is that there is a cost of education. It's almost an engineering model, as if you were building a bridge or a dam or something like that. And the real trouble is there isn't one cost of education. There's a whole series of various possible costs of education, depending on how much quality you want to buy, how much education you want to buy. You could probably spend all the money that there is in the state of Wyoming on education, get an individual tutor for everybody, and you'd have a slightly better education system. But we couldn't afford it. And I suppose we have to go through this ritual. But what it comes down to is that in the end, we're going to have to make a judgment, weighing as is our constitutional responsibility. How much education system we're going to buy, how much quality we're going to buy in the education system, against how much we're going to spend on all the other needs that the state has, and how much we're going to take from our citizens in taxes. And I hope as they go through this recalibration that we'll recognize that that's what's going on and have some choices so we can see what we can buy for various levels of expenditure so that we can fulfill our constitutional obligations on how we fund education versus how we fund everything else versus how much we raise in taxes. Because that's the essence of representative government. And that's a function that we have to have. And I've been a little disturbed in the past as we've gone through this that you get a single figure, sort of a fixed thing, this is the cost of education, because that really doesn't correspond with how the world works.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to ask a basic question because I think we have to do it. But I want to know why you took the education committees out of it. You know, they're the guys that sit there hour after hour listening to all the nuances and all the information and everything. In my experience before, when the education committees worked with it, when we first went into this and we did two standing committees, corporations and education, then when we got back on the floor, when we first did it, we had a group of people that had pretty good understanding of it. We've gone back and forth in different committees, but why do you take the education committee out of it? They're the guys that ought to sit there with this and learn it and understand it and teach it to the rest of us.
Further discussion? Senator Cove.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to debate too much with the tall, lanky senator from Natrona County, but I learned a long time ago that you don't do that unless you really know what you're talking about. I don't want you to take that to the bank. But we are dealing with a Supreme Court decision that does require that education funding be cost-based. It goes back to Campbell 1. And in doing that, through Campbell 1, 2, and 3, the real lawyers here know more about it than I do, but they allowed us to establish standards, and they wanted us, they said we would fund education with a common basket of educational goods and services, and there would be equal opportunity throughout the state, and it would be cost-based. Clearly, the costs of delivering education in Jackson are different from Lusk. We had a big, extensive debate last summer with Dr. Godby from the university, came in and presented a study on regional cost adjustment. We use the Wyoming Cost of Living Index. Basically, there's a percentage factor applied to that on how education is funded. We went through all that. I hear what the good senator from Natrona County is saying. And I don't really like a lot of the stuff we've done down here since 1997. I don't like the loss of local control. I could go on and on about that. Why not the Joint Education Committee? I'm not really sure. I didn't, Management Council directed the drafting of the bill. I guess I'd ask somebody from the Management Council, and I don't want to put them on the spot. We didn't have much to say about that. I do know the Joint Education Committee is busy doing a lot of other stuff. And if you look at the composition, it says 5 members of the Wyoming Senate. Well, at least the chairman's going to be on there for sure out of education. And I would suspect that the president will probably take some others off of education. But I guess I'd ask the Management Council to try to answer why they chose a select committee.
Get off the hook.
Mr. President.
Well, you've already alluded to a lot of
The Education Committee is going to have an awful lot of things to do as they go through just even implementing that. Historically, we have worked on this mostly through select committees. I remember the first year I came down here, President Evans said, I want you to be on the select school committee. And I said, I'm not an education expert. I shouldn't be. He says, don't worry. All you got to do is do a little tweaking of what's already out there. I don't think so. But, yeah, I hope we can keep education people involved. But the management council felt, good or bad, that the education committee is already going to have many, many things to do. This is not a full-time legislature, although it seems like it sometimes. But they thought with the implementation of a select committee again, which we have done repeatedly in the past, to oversee this, that it would be more effective. If I may talk a little to the senator from Natrona County, ultimately I agree with you. But I believe that after recalibration, where the model, we can make a case in court, which we're going to have to do, that we are now up to date, then I think this legislature can at that point come in and say, okay, we're eighth in amount of money per ADM. If it is our goal that we're going to be first, we can put the money in to do that. I don't think that's going to be a problem, because we're then establishing a criteria that is the criteria of this legislature. But I would submit to you, trying to do that in little bits and pieces before recalibration is not the proper way to do it. Hence, I feel very strongly that we must get recalibration out of the way, and then we can do all of the things that all of us are going to have the ability to make choices on of what do we want the state of Wyoming to be in education. And that's why I think a recalibration is absolutely so critical. I think it's absolutely critical, and we get it done and get it in before we come back down here again, and then I feel we are free to make those choices once we've established that we are on firm ground with an up-to-date, recalibrated cost-based model. That's the only way we're ever going to get out of court, in my judgment. And so hopefully there will be education people involved, as was indicated. But it was the thought of the management council that, hey, education committee is going to have plenty, plenty to do, and they will be involved in this oversight committee.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 228 do pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The House Bill 228 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 257. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 257, University Securities Law, sponsored by the Capital Financing Committee, an act relating to the University Securities Law. It was referred to Committee number 12, Rules and Procedure, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Hines, Job, Larson, Mockler, and Schiffer, Senator Larson, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 257. And to explain this, I'd like to call on Senator Mockler.
Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 257 was brought to the Capital Finance and Investments Committee over the interim. They would like us to update their investment security investment statutes. We did this for local government a few years ago, 1996. So we just somehow left them out of the mix, and they've, because of that, been very restricted in how they can use their money. In addition, the bill looks at some archaic language and just eliminates it. And to walk you really quickly through the bill, it essentially does four things. It allows the university to issue bonds at either fixed or variable rates. This is page 4, line 24. Issuing the bonds at variable rates is authorized in the Natural Gas Pipeline Authority statutes and is a recognized financing alternative, which we're allowing the university to do. It also removes the restriction on sales of bonds at a discount. The second thing it does is it permits the use of, and this is on page 5, line 4 through 8, permits the use of interest rate exchange agreements with firms with a high financial rating. Such agreements are recognized interest rate management tools, and the two of these together are to help us lower the cost of borrowing for the University of Wyoming, which does two things, saves the state money, saves the university money, and in the cases where the bonds are issued for building dorms and remodeling dorms and buildings on campus, ultimately saves in tuition money and saves the students and the parents of this state money. The third thing it does is it removes all the references to coupons. Bond interest payments are typically handled through regular financial channels, not through payment in exchange for coupons. This is a very archaic and old method, and they just would like to get this out of their law. As once the statute's open, they'd like to clean it up as much as possible, and that is throughout the bill. You'll see the reference to coupons is deleted. And the last thing is it does is it permits investment of the bond proceeds pending disbursement in any interest instrument in the laundry list, which is in Wyoming Statute 9-4-831. And that's the public funds investment section, which is what we updated for all local government in 1996. And essentially, again, what you're allowing with this is right now they're only allowed to invest in federal securities, which doesn't give them much flexibility or much return. This just gives them a little bit more flexibility, again, to give them a little bit more return, to give them a little bit more opportunity to save their students and the state of Wyoming money. And that's really all the bill does. As I said, it's got four things that it essentially does, but it's really just a modernization of archaic language and to allow them to catch up to where we let everybody else catch up in 1996.
Further discussion on the bill? Further discussion? You ready for the vote? All those in favor of Mr. President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, you do so with a recommendation that House Bill 257 do pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 257 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 63. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 63, State Investment Standards, sponsored by the Capital Financing Committee, an act relating to public funds. It was referred to Committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hines, Job, Larson, Mockler, and Schiffer. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 63, State Investment Standards. And once again, on this good bill brought to you by the Capital Finance Committee, I'd like to call on Senator Mockler.
Senator Mockler.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Indeed, this is a good bill, and it actually took quite a bit of work, and I think it will require a little bit of explanation. We did hand out a House Bill 63 State Investment Standards kind of general synopsis of the bill, and I thought that was important, and the State Treasurer and I, well, mostly the State Treasurer and her staff, put this together to kind of walk you through the main concepts in the bill. Just to begin with, I thought it would be important for you all to get a sense of what we're doing. The state of Wyoming currently has an asset value of $5,957,616,739, and that's the money that's being invested through this bill. And I think that's very important that we appreciate that it is a tidy sum, and it is very important that we keep up with modern investment standards, that we keep up with some opportunities that are available to the state of Wyoming, that we not make it so restrictive. As we all know, it took a long time for us to be able to even diversify our portfolio into the equity market. What we're doing now is we're allowing a little bit said, additional diversification. And we've started that a couple years ago when we went into private equity, last year when we went into real estate investment. But I do think it's important to just get a sense of the total amount of money that's being invested in these funds and why it's important that we pay attention to the bill. A couple of years ago, in 1999, we passed the prudent investor rule. And when we did that, the Senate had quite a discussion. And although some of us actually thought we passed a prudent investor rule for the entire investment of the state's funds, we didn't actually do that. We had some holes in it. And so what you find as you look through our current law are places where the prudent investor rule, which is a standard of investment that we've accepted as a fiduciary responsibility for the state, that there are places where there were holes. And so some things were permitted under certain sections and some things weren't. So I thought, really, it currently appears, and I think you can look on page 9 of the bill as well as page 3, because that's kind of where we sort of have our conflicts. The prudent investor rule appears in Wyoming Statute 94711, and that's what we're moving back into this section, because it's kind of scattered throughout. We're putting it in one place and making very sure that the overall investments of the State Land and Investment Board are maintained and invested in accordance with the prudent investor rule. So it's the purpose of the modification is to effectively consolidate the various references to the prudent investor rule and make sure that there's no confusion about who it applies to and when and which investments it applies to. We had some investments it applied to and some it didn't. The ones that it didn't, we had a separate kind of investment policy and overriding fiduciary responsibility, and that ended up actually being confusing. Another thing the handout points out, which is throughout the bill, is that we have investment advisors and investment managers, so what we're really trying to do is to make it managers throughout and have consistency in terms. And this just happens by virtue of the fact that every year we come in and change things and use a word here, use a word there. It's nice every once in a while when you open an entire title to go through and, as we did with the last bill, just make some consistency. Page 4, lines 11 through 18, and these were actually, I think, you know, this is something that the committee spent a little bit of time on, and I think that we should hit a little bit on. These changes allow our S&P 500 index manager to cross-trade stocks internally as long as the state is not charged a fee. Further, it would allow the state to pay its current brokers to do research, which is a common practice if it's legally reported. And there was a concern, and I think you may have gotten some emails and some information from some people in Cheyenne who have looked at this bill and thought that we were going to allow kickbacks. And we just want to assure you, and the treasurer has assured me, that that's not what the case is here. What we're really saying is that, you know, we're not really too concerned about their business. That doesn't relate to us. But we are very concerned that the state never lose any money because of other actions by these managers. So I think that we've worked this out, and I'm very comfortable. There is language in there that was deleted that if you aren't comfortable, you can put back in, and it makes it repetitive that there isn't a problem, but it isn't really necessary. Page 5, line 23 through page 6, line 1, is making sure that the standard we're using, if you look at the stricken language, the Association of Investment Managers Research is now the Chartered Financial Analyst Institute. And I guess this is another catching up with what are the new terms and what are the new requirements for people who are going to be investment managers for the state of Wyoming. We want them to be certified and we want them to be accountable. Page 7, lines 1 through 7 are differentiating the requirements for managers of traditional assets versus the alternative assets. And the alternative assets, again, are private equity, real estate, hedge funds. There are a lot of alternative assets. We're looking at a few of them because we're a very conservative state. I don't know that although we've had people do presentations to the state treasurer and also to our committee on hedge funds, we all kind of hedge whenever they come towards us and think about that one a little bit. We have authorized, as I said, the investment in private equity, and in the pool of risk, we're at the very, very low end of risk in that category, and we are looking at alternative investment of real estate, not going out and buying more land for the state of Wyoming, but actually investing in real estate as a returnable investment, something where we can look at and join larger groups that actually do large investment. The last couple last really big things on page 8, lines 1 through 14, The addition of, to 94709 is intended to clarify what is required of the SLID board for approval of an investment. And the approval isn't for investment in stock A or stock B, it's for the concept, the material approval, for instance, that you're going to have investments in long-term or short-term or, you know, just sort of the concept of the investment. We don't actually go in and micromanage at the SLID board level, and but we do keep very good tabs on them at the state treasurer level, and we have a consultant that looks at their return and their investment and their opportunities and how they're performing, and we make recommendations, and we get recommendations on that that are made to the SLID board. It also allows the treasurer to be able to evaluate and negotiate the non-material aspects. It doesn't require that the State Land and Investment Board do that. It lets the treasurer do that. And those are sort of the adverse change. You know, the committee, the SLID board has accepted the material, and the treasurer looks at the less, at the material adverse changes to reapprove them, and kind of says, yeah, they're kind of where we want them to be, and that would be okay. Remember, any of the contracts that go through the treasurer's office and the SLID board are always approved by the attorney general. This is, you know, we're not trying to go around that. We're just trying to make it so that the SLID board doesn't have to do all the grunt work. Page 8, lines 16 through 19, is where we have a standing committee amendment, which I think we have to read in and actually vote on, so maybe it would make and I appreciate your indulgence in letting me do the bill in order, because I get very confused when we pull sections out. So if we'd read that amendment in, I will explain the amendment, and hopefully we'll vote for it.
Will the reading clerk please read in the standing committee amendment?
House Bill 63, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 12.
Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the standing committee amendment and ask that we support it. When you look on page 8 at lines 16 through 19, you'll see that there's a definition of alternative assets, which says that the assets have the potential to provide economic value to the owner but are not traditionally considered assets. That just sort of confused everyone, because alternative assets and are really always going to be in a range of things, and there needs to be a sense of creativity there. And we didn't want to imply that they wouldn't be an asset, and that's kind of what this did. So it was awkward language that the treasurer asked us to take out. Although it doesn't leave us with a definition of alternative assets, it's very well known that an alternative asset is one that isn't, as you noticed throughout the rest of the bill, which is why I appreciate letting you do it in this order, that there are real standards that are set forth for the people that manage traditional assets. They're S&P 500, they're traded openly and publicly. Alternative assets are not. These are private companies that we work with, private managers, and so what we've asked is that in the amendment we just take out what would probably end up being a very confusing definition, and I'll answer questions on that very confusing definition we'd like taken out.
Any discussion on the standing committee amendment? Question on the standing committee amendment. All those in favor of the standing committee amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last thing I wanted to touch on was on page 9, lines 23 through page 10, lines 19. And when you look at this, these are modifications to 94711B, which reflect the continuation of the changes intended to address the proper application of the prudent investor rule. In other words, we really are striving to have this rule applied everywhere. That the managers, and you can see that back at the beginning, that anyone basically that touches our money, whether they're employees or the treasurer or the SLID board, or really, really understands that they are obligated to follow the prudent investor rule, that they have a fiduciary responsibility to the state and to the people. In particular, paragraph 2 is added to 94711 to clarify that the prudent investor rule does not contemplate persons who in fact manage a security, officers, directors, or fund managers, and that investments in securities do not constitute a delegation of investment authority of the treasurer to the investment manager. And I think that they've just, as I said, we've gone through this, we've tried to make sure that when we do our asset allocation, which we've really started to get a good sense of, we're no longer 100% in fixed income. We're actually, if this chart wasn't so small, I'd tell you, but we're Private equity is 0.3%. U.S. equity is 13.7. U.S. fixed is 64%. Remember, our goal is to get to about 50% in allocations outside of fixed equity. So we're getting closer. We're at 64% for fixed equity. We have about 15% more that we'd like to diversify to make sure that during the times that one asset class is up and the others are down, that what we have is an ability to generate income for the general fund, which is what this whole portfolio is designed to do. Not just the general fund, but the tobacco fund, you know, really essentially to get all of the income streams as healthy and as balanced and as stable as possible. And that's the bill, and I'd love to answer questions, I'm sure.
Mr. President.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. An excellent presentation by the Senator from Laramie County. There was something mentioned there I think we all must understand. She did mention that, but I want to emphasize it. The ability to invest in real estate doesn't mean the state's going out and buy property. Now, this was indicated to you, but I've had some people indicate that the state's going to get in the real estate business and go out and buy property. This will allow them to invest in what are usually and commonly called REITs, real estate investment trusts, which will be groups that go out and do buy property widespread throughout the country, throughout areas, and so on, in order to use that as, again, an alternative investment. It gives you the ability to diversify your portfolio, cuts down the risk, increases yields, and that diversification is important. But don't anybody believe that they're going to go out and be buying specific pieces of land, because they're not.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question with regard to the investment in alternative assets, and I know that the Standing Committee Amendment took out that weird definition. If we think that allowing such investments is imprudent, do we need to defeat this bill, or do we need to amend the bill because it's otherwise allowed in the statutes? I am worried. I've got considerable confidence in the current treasurer, but she's term limited unless somebody brings a lawsuit, gets that thrown out too, and no telling what we'll get next. And I really am worried that we're putting our state investments wide open.
Senator Mockler.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure the answer of that, except that I don't think you ought to kill this bill because there's a lot of really good stuff in it. But I will check and see if it's, I think, because we opened it up last year and actually said real estate and we said private equity before, that it's possible if there's something you really do not want us in, that we can always add it to the statute and say, you know, except for hedge funds or derivatives or something like that. I don't think it precludes us from saying no to certain kinds, but it leaves the area open for her to look at the wide range of assets, to really talk to us, to her advisory committee, and then finally get approval with the rest of the SLID board. So if there is, I will check on that, but if there is an area that you really don't want us in, I think there's probably still flexibility in the laundry list to say, under no circumstances shall we invest in hedge funds or derivatives or whatever else I can't think of.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Chairman, and also I think you have to realize that in the area of alternative investments, there's a wide range within there. And there are people, consultants or whatever you want to managers, I guess, who do nothing but specialize in that area. And part of what she's asking for is permission to utilize those skills. There's actually some of them, strange enough, in the state of Wyoming. But that covers a broad range, not only in terms of size. You can have smaller companies. You can actually have some very, very large companies that fall into that category. If they're privately held, you can still invest, but they're out there, and they're excellent companies. It's a question of getting the right people involved in terms of advice and what the prospects are for those investments. Just because they're alternative does not even mean that they're neither higher risk or any of those things. It may mean that it provides a balance to other investments that are over here, and that's really what the treasurer is looking for. Over the long, long haul, when one goes down, the other is very likely to come up. And if you're only looking at one side of the equation, you will not get the yields that we anticipate we'll get off of the permanent mineral trust fund.
Mr. President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A further answer to the senator from Natrona County, I would refer you to the top of page 8 where it says the state treasurer shall obtain the approval of the state loan and investment board prior to the investment of funds in alternative assets. You can have a change in one office. That does not mean that they're free to do that without the prior approval of the state loan and investment board.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Ready for a vote? All those in favor of House of when the Committee of the Whole rises report that House Bill 63 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 63 is passed Committee of the Whole, and the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 69. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 69, Public Transit Account Appropriation, sponsored by Representative Cohey, an act relating to the public transit account, was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, and reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Case, Hines, Job, and Nicholas. Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard a reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that from the Committee of the Whole rises to report it as so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill Number 69. There are no standing committee amendments. Senator Anderson, are you going to carry this? I yield to Senator Anderson.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am, in fact, here to talk a bit about House Bill 69, and it has to do with public transportation account appropriation. And first, I'd like to start off just talking about a bit about the bill and what prompted the bill, and then I'll probably finish talking a little bit about what Y-Trans is and some of the accounts, and then I'd like to defer then finally to another member of appropriations who will polish the numbers a little better perhaps than I might. But anyway, there is contained in this bill an appropriation for $1 million from the general fund that is to flow to the Department of Transportation, and these funds then are appropriated under this act, are deposited in a separate account, and the separate account was then established earlier through Wyoming Statute 2415-102. The funds and then the interest then earned from this separate account within this public transportation account will be then distributed out through the eligible grantees in the public transit system, and that was provided through authority through 2415-101 and fall under some of the rules that have been earlier put together by the Department of Transportation. There's explanation in regard to how these will be distributed and how they're handled within that account, and I probably won't go into a lot of detail there. Going on down to line 13, again, this talks about the year, the term, and, of course, the amount, again, $1 million. Line 17 through 20, these then again are to be distributed to the Department of Transportation and talks again about the account. Section 2 then explains that this appropriation is, in fact, to be a one-time appropriation, and it shall not become a part of the division standard budget and the Department of Administration or the ANI's budget preparation cycle. So with that explanation of the amount of the funds, where they go, and kind of what they're going to be used for, I'd like to talk with you just a minute, if I may, to a little bit about why Y-Trans and Wyoming Association of Senior Project Directors offered this, and talk a little bit about, I think, the significance and the importance of these funds and kind of what drives this bill. I would also call your attention to a sheet that looks like this. It was has my name on it and the ARP logo or ARP logo on it. But anyway, Wyoming has currently experienced a major demographic shift in what is predicted to rank the state as first in the nation in percentage of residents age 60-plus. And we know from a lot of the retirees that are moving into our communities and the outflow of some of the younger people that we are an aging state. In 2004, there were over 77,000 Wyoming residents aged 60-plus. So I guess as I stand before you, I am not without peers in the sense of, at least in that sense of age. But transportation is essential to the dignity and I think the independence and in some cases the survival of some Wyoming seniors, and like many other senior services programs, transit program funding has been flat for many years and has not kept pace with growth in the senior and disabled populations, and we may actually offer some evidence later as to how these funds have been on the decline over the last 5 or 6 years. A little background, Wyoming Trans is an association of about 50 local transit and social service agencies in 23 counties serving the needs of the seniors and disabled Wyoming residents, and I recently, we had the experience in my community where we lost transportation for 5 kidney dialysis patients who had to make their way from my community to a central location in Wyoming to a major medical center, and we were able to go to this fund to provide some transportation for those people who could neither afford to do this on their own. And so that's something where it really came to our community as an aid. These agencies provide over 1,950,000 one-way rides annually to 21,000-plus individuals, 13,000 of whom have no other mode of transportation. And that was the case in many instances in my community with these people who needed kidney dialysis. For basic necessities sometimes, such as grocery shopping, my mother went into a stage of macular degeneration, was no longer able to drive. She capitalized upon this in order to get herself to the grocery store and back, and so that works well for those folks. Visits to the doctor, meal programs, and many other, a whole myriad of other things. And these agencies now have a fleet of more than 200 vehicles and over 200 trained professional drivers to provide this very essential service. So some of the recommendations that are coming out of this and what we'll discuss later is to keep pace with these current needs. House Bill 69 comes before you today as a means to establish an appropriation, as we said, of about $1 million to be distributed to YDOT for these transportation programs. There was quite a significant adjustment in the amount of funds requested by the JAC in this instance. But to assure you that these people are going to be able to manage this at least from now to the time that that takes to get to the budget session, I'm going to call upon the very capable lady member of JAC to talk with you a little bit in regard to some of the rationale, why we arrived at the figure, and why we think that it will be adequate to provide the needs that we've just discussed. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to defer to the lady member of the appropriations.
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to give you a little more detail, too, on who this money is going to. And we said 50 local transit and social service agencies, and sometimes we think that that's just our senior citizen centers. And in addition to the senior citizen centers, you have public systems in Teton County, Sweetwater, Cheyenne, and Casper, who will receive some of these operating funds through grants. And you have the UW Fleet System, Children's Developmental Centers, the Wind River Transport Authority, and Metitzi Recreation District. So you can see that there's a lot of social service agencies providing this transportation in all 23 counties. And so this is across the state, and they do benefit. For 5 years now, their funding has been flat. And as we all know, you have the cost of fuel going up, insurance, the utilities, wages, and they have to do drug testing. So you've got some of those costs in there. Originally, the bill had $10 million going out over a 5-year period to help beef up these transit systems and support them and help them with their operating expenses. The bill is down to $1 million. And they think they can get through, because one of the complicating factors here is, as you heard our good senator from Washington last week say, things move slowly in Washington. And they have been, the transit systems have been operating under continuing resolutions because there's no reauthorization of T21 yet. And so they don't know what's going to happen in Wyoming. There are other states out there who think we get too much because we put in $1 and we get $1.60 back in Wyoming, and it may not be that lucrative in the future. And so this is bridge funding to get them through another year until we get the T21 authorized and we can find out where they sit and exactly how much money they might need at that point. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the rest of the story, I guess, and we both answer questions.
Any questions on House Bill 69? All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that House Bill 69 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 69 passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 142. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 142, Municipal Incorporation, sponsored by Representative Luthy, an act relating to cities and towns. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, and reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amendment. Aye, Senators Haynes, Meyer, Mockler, Scott. No, Senator Johnson, Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a do pass motion on House Bill 142. There was a standing committee amendment. I would ask the clerk read it in at this time.
House Bill number 142, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 14.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that standing committee amendment and ask that further reading of the amendment be dispensed with. Mr. Chairman, we're going to hold discussion on the standing committee amendment, but for discussion of this House bill, I would refer to the good Senator, Donnacan Sorenstein of the Star Valley, Pat Allman.
Senator Allman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill that has been brought up from concerns from, in fact, the next two bills. This will be the history on both of them, so we'll get two things done here at once. But this act is something related to forming a city or a town, and it's providing that territories may be incorporated if connected to a common culinary water supply. Now, we've had discussion about culinary. If anybody, as I explain this, comes up with a better word than culinary, we would be glad to take that on. But you have to remember, a rancher wrote this bill. I had something to do with it. So, anyways, what we're doing is taking existing statutes and we're adding the words including multiple territories within 1 mile of each other and which are connected to a common culinary water system. And then on the back side here on page 2, we've added when territories connected to a common culinary water system are incorporated under this act, the pipelines connecting the territories shall be included in the town limits. The reason we put this in is a few years ago we have a group within our area that are considering becoming a town. They tried this a few years ago and they weren't very well organized at that time, and now they feel that they're in better prepared for that. But while they went through that process the first time, a judge came up and took the section, this one and the next one that we'll be talking with about, and made his own rulings on this. And he stated that on this particular area, there is two plats from the original person who developed, the developer of this, what they call Star Valley Ranch. He made two plats go down on the other side of what he has for his RV park. It's a
commercial area in between there, and he started building his houses for the ranch down below. Well, the ranch took over at that time over and said, you can't keep doing this building out like that because it's going to be not very beneficial for us. This ranch at one time, when it started out in the 1970s, was a your normal developing summer home type area, but now it has turned into, it has potential for over 1,000 homes on it. They're up to 800, just over 800 right now. Over 500 of those people live year-round on this ranch. And this plat that's down below, there's two plats down on below called plats 4 and 5, and they have a number of those homes on it. The ranch provides the water. That's the only connection that they have, is that water line. It has an easement that goes down along the county highway. It goes one side of the, on the highway is school section. In fact, that school section is part of, on the one side of this, these plats. They take care of it completely. They have the water there. They push the snow in the wintertime for these people. These people are abide by all the laws and restrictions of the ranch. They are part of that ranch. Well, now that the ranch has come back and years, and they decided that they would like to become incorporated again, so they have to go through this process. And they were thinking about this, what the judge had said. During that time, they did, Senator Roberts at the time, went to the Attorney General and asked him his opinion on this ruling. And after describing the situation, the Attorney General said apparently the inclusion of these two plats with the other 19 plats will meet an area requirement of not more than 3 square miles, which is also in our statutes. Contiguity is not required by the statute, and the words continuous is not found in the statute. So, according to him, there is no reason for them to become, that they cannot become a town. So what we've done is we just wanted to clear the wording up on this so there would not be any, as they go through this process. And I know that we hate to make statutes for one or two little, one place or another, but we do run into that. A lot of statutes start because of something happening in your area. But with the growth of Wyoming, especially up in the northern part of Wyoming and that, these developments will be starting to happen. And I think that if they're very well developed areas and they are providing water and they are providing services, that they should not be taken out and say that they cannot become a town if they want to. With that, I will hope that we'll have a favorable vote on this, and I'll stand for questions.
Any discussion on the bill?
Amendment. Mr. Chairman, we do have that standing committee amendment. It has been read in and moved. We'll discuss it right now, Mr. Chairman, if that's appropriate. We look at page 1, line 14, after town, we insert and not ineligible for incorporation under the provisions of WS 15-1411. Mr. Chairman, if you remember, that section we worked a long time on is in the annexation area, and it's a potential urban area, Mr. Chairman. And so we're saying that potential urban area is that 1 mile boundary from a town, so we're saying you can't have a new incorporation if you go within that 1 mile boundary. And so we're prohibiting it from that perspective, Mr. Chairman. Then on the next topic of this, we have page 1, line 16, and page 2, line 1. This goes into the existing language, Mr. Chairman, and it amends it to say, with a density of at least 70 persons per mile, Mr. Chairman, and it deletes the language there that it that says it's 200 persons and not more than 3 square miles. It's a little bigger density than the 3 square miles. The discussion was that it's necessarily an arbitrary 3 mile or 3 square mile area was not particularly important, but the density was the most important part of that. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for your favorable consideration. I may have a further discussion of that second part of the amendment on second reading tomorrow.
Discussion. Senator Peck.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering why the choice of words, which appears to be a double negative, you say, and not ineligible. What's the difference between that meaning and just saying and eligible?
Senator Mockler.
Mr. Chairman, that was put in that way because it's referencing a statute that's already the negative. It wasn't put in the positive when they wrote it. And so we're actually, I mean, it is awkward, but it was really probably the easiest way without going back into the other statute and rewriting it into a positive negative.
Further discussion, Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about that because that particular statute says, in essence, that you can't incorporate within that 1 mile urban area unless the city, the municipality, passes a resolution to that effect to do so. So I'm not certain how this fits, if that's actually the right vernacular, because in some respects, 15.1.4.11 is permissive. It says, first of all, you can't incorporate it unless the governing body passes a resolution to that effect. So I'm wondering how that works.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the way it works is that, and it doesn't affect the particular circumstance that gave rise to this bill, because they're further away than that. The way it works is if you get within that 1 mile, then we're making sure that those provisions govern. And if you get within the 1 mile of the city, you have to have permission of the existing city, and this language just confirms that that is the law.
Further discussion. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just sort of a question to the sponsors of the bill. Oftentimes we have judicial decisions that don't make sense, that are not appealed from, and families get, or constituents get frustrated and come down and ask for statutory relief. And so you create a statutory provision, but in this, I'm not even certain what our policy should be to encourage or discourage municipalities from being created. I assume that you can always get together and have an improvement district, but what you don't get with an improvement district are the state funds that go to towns and cities, towns, and counties. But in this case, in the effort to help the residents, we're actually restricting the definition from what we had before, so you're actually narrowing the group of people that could come in. By saying a culinary, I assume what you're just referring to a drinking water system. So you say if you've established a drinking water system among yourselves, that's a prerequisite to forming a city and town, which has never been a prerequisite before. If you had 300, 500, 600 residents together, and part of the reason why they wanted to incorporate was to install a drinking water system among themselves, why would we prohibit them from incorporating? In a sense, the idea is to try to identify one entity, and it becomes more restrictive, and it's not any more helpful than you had when you started.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a misreading of the specific language here. It says any territory, and then you have an including multiple territories that are connected with one of these water systems. But it still reads, if you disregard the including phrase, any territory not included in an incorporated city or town. That's existing law. That changes only in that what we're doing here is allowing ones that are not connected, except by one of these water systems. And so I don't think it's not being more restrictive than what's there now.
We're just giving an additional way they can get in that will fit this particular circumstance and may well fit some other circumstances in due course of time.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I was first up. Mr. Chairman, just so I understand this, and with especially with the new language on two, so you've got, let's say, 150 people here and 100 people down here, and they're a couple of miles apart, and the only connection they have is this water line. And it says here that the water line, that the two of them are connected by the water line, therefore they can become a municipality. So if I'm looking at a town map, am I looking at a blob here and a blob there, and then this thin line connecting them? It's like the ultimate gerrymander or something?
Point of order. Are we
Senator
not on
Johnson.
The amendment?
We're on the amendment, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is passed. Back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, same question.
Senator Meyer.
Okay. There is more besides just the thin line, the culinary pipeline, because in this particular instance, you also have the same covenants, the same agreements, the same association. They represent both particular land masses. So in this particular situation, you have all of those other things also.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was the no vote on this bill coming out of the committee. The water line that goes between these two areas, these two subdivisions, goes along county roads right of way, making 90-degree turns and so on and so forth. It's not even straight. And in between, we have an RV park and a golf course. And then off to the side is a state section that's leased out for grazing. So if this type of thing happens, first of all, it's going to be surrounded at least on two sides with the community, with the municipality, and then what happens as far as annexation goes if it's on the third side. But, Mr. Chairman, I just can't see Wyoming as a blob of communities with some land here and some land here and some land here and some land here, all within a mile of each other and not contiguous. That just doesn't sound like common sense, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Now, if they incorporate, does that mean they're going to elect mayors and a council and all that with this? And what would keep Cheyenne from doing the very same thing? Because there's lots of water lines tying into different subdivisions around Cheyenne, around Gillette, all that. What could keep them from not just taking them all in under this bill?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a new incorporation. So it's a whole new animal, and old animals, not but just too old, just can't have kids. This is a new one. This is totally new. It's a new incorporated city or town. It doesn't have anything to do with annexation. It doesn't have anything to do with annexation, with the exception that we're not going to allow one of these things unless a city now, within a mile, unless the city approves it. So that's the only thing that possibly could be construed with annexation. The city of Cheyenne can't do this. This is a new incorporation.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can't believe that the land in between, the two pieces of land that are going to be municipalized, wouldn't be in jeopardy in some manner. There had to be some pressure to that land that's not that attaches to both sides, and I can't believe that the annexation laws are
are somewhat limiting that kind of a process in existing municipal and municipalities, those cities, that it would seem that the land that isn't within the scope of the municipals, that they would certainly be in jeopardy for that, and you're forced, a lot of things come into play here with when you're not contiguous.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Altman.
Okay, first off, with this case, I would see in the future that that land in the middle will be part of the town. The developer is still alive. He owns that until he's getting late in age, and he'll probably, we've been told that his sons will probably get out, and it will be a benefit actually to that township to have them in there, and I think that they are planning on that. But until now, that can't happen. But meanwhile, just the arguments that I'm hearing mainly are more in annexation. And I told the people when I was going to present this that if we hadn't had annexation this year, it might have gone a little easier. But people have annexation in their mind. This isn't annexation. It is a new town. New towns aren't very often developed in Wyoming. I think Bear River from Evingston, is that the name of the new town there? How long have they been? About 5 years, 3 years or 5 years, I think. And then I think Alpine, I know they're one of the newer towns, and they've been a town for over 20 years. Towns don't come really fast in Wyoming. And I don't think we should stop them from being a town. And I think we just really need to keep in track that we're talking about town. And these two, they're half a mile apart. They had no control in what this developer did, but they do service, the association services them, and when they become a town. And I'm not saying, you know, they still have a lot of processes to go to just by including this. It's just part of that puzzle and part of that part of becoming a town. They still have other things that they need to accomplish before they can. But it's just clearing that way because they really can't get rid of that part. I mean, these people are part of their area, and they can't just make a town up here and forget them because this is a vital part of their association. And like I say, I just want everybody, when you think about voting on this, don't mix up annexation with a new town. And that's all I have.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how appropriate this is, but I would imagine that it's on the border of Article 3, Section 27. The legislature shall not pass local or special laws in any of the following enumerated cases, that is to say, incorporations of cities, towns, or villages. This could be for use in the state here and after if people in all of the counties want it, but right now it's smacking of a specific problem.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's any constitutional problem here. Yes, like many of the bills that we pass, it's motivated by a particular local circumstance. But it is a general law. The Standing Committee amendments really apply to general circumstances. We're making a general law here, and you need to look at it in that light, that this will give a means where you get one of these developments that they're close together but there's something in between, they can incorporate, and you're dealing with potentially quite a few people in one of these things. So it's not in any way in any jeopardy. Now, if it said a bill to incorporate town X in Star Valley, that would run afoul of the Constitution. This one doesn't. It's a general law, and you do have to look at it that way.
Senator Ross.
I just would like to, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask one question, and that is that I've been getting a whole bunch of emails, and they've been running on both sides of the fence here. And so I'd like to have some discussion about the dynamics, because apparently some want to incorporate and some do not want to incorporate. And just like to have a better feel, particularly since that's all the way across the state diagonally from me.
Senator Meyer.
They did have a referendum or election, and it's some like 63%, well over 60, and Senator Allman could correct me if I'm wrong on that, but it's well over 60% of the people said they wanted to incorporate. It's a situation where you've got some old rusty 2-inch pipes, and they've got some considerations there where this used to be a basically a summer thing. People would come in for the summers, and now with the overspill from Teton County, it's a year-round thing, and they have to really look for fire protection, and so they're going to have to replace most of the infrastructure in there. So they can have fire protection and update that infrastructure. The land in between there is primarily vacant as far as people who actually live as a residence. And as far as any future possible annexation, you know, for a forced annexation, you have to have 75% surrounded. I mean, and this is no way near to that. And it would be years and years and years and years before I would consider that could even be a possibility of that happening, especially when you're blocked by a state school section on one side. So, Mr. Chairman, I think on and for the bill, I think it's a reasonable thing to do, even though it is driven by specific circumstances. Often specific circumstances lead us to a future that we should be looking at.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of things, and correct me if I'm wrong. If I think that this is the creation of additional county pockets, which we are causing problems all over the state. We had that research done this summer, and then through the hearings that we held, we heard reoccurring stories of all over the state of county pockets where surrounded by, in these county pockets, they are, systems are failing, water nitrates are getting into water systems, and it's a real big problem. So my question on this is this creating additional county pockets? And then I got a phone call, which is really what's kind of a thing from the way, way past, from someone that I knew when I was about 10 or 11 years old, who now lives up there. And she tells me that when they did the referendum, the voting, that it was not 60% of the landowners. That they felt as landowners that they had not been represented. She told me that it was not even half of the landowners that had voted for this. So that's all I know. But I guess in what I've learned about county pockets, I'd like to know what this creates as far as additional county pockets that, once again, we'll come to the state and ask for help to clean up our water and for sewage systems that no longer can be permitted when they fail. So, thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Allman?
On county pockets, if I understand what you're saying on that, there's a lot of things being created out there. A lot of things are happening, and it's going so fast that the counties can't keep up with what's going on. This area is a place that wants to take charge, and they feel like a municipality is that way of doing that, so that they can get charge and improve their water system and then do that, not rely so much on county. One thing is, though, if that doesn't go through a municipality, then they will be binding for state funds and anything else they can to still do the same things that they need to do if they can become a municipality. As for the voting, there's a lot of landowners that own multiple lands, and I think that has to be in consideration, and a lot of them are still speculation type where they haven't built on them. A lot of them did not respond back to the survey. They were very good in doing their survey. They lied out, and they actually showed different ways of doing it, from being a municipality to becoming bankrupt to all different sorts of ways that we need to have to solve this problem. Then everybody had this choice of mailing back and voting on how they felt. And I'm a member of the, I have land up on this course, or I call it course, that's why I have members, so I can golf. But it was very well presented, everybody had a choice, and I do have people, and somebody says, well, you're getting emails that are, well, I'm also got a lot of emails from Torrington saying they didn't want the prison there, if we want to bring that one back up. So, I mean, you're always going to find people who are against it. I have told people that are against it, this is just a part of it. They still have a say in if they don't. But they're not coming out. They really aren't. And I'm not sure the reason why. There's a few pocket people that are saying no. But they're not really standing up to do it. And this is very organized. And the board of directors of the place is in support of it. And that's a key thing to this. Before, they tried to do it without having the board of directors supporting them. But the board of directors is supporting this.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very familiar with this little area there. In this particular case, and I can't guarantee that in some other cases it might not be used differently, it is going to do absolutely no harm. They've got to find a way to be able to replace. So it's actually, I think the problem was created because the original developer put in used water pipe to start with, which isn't the most prudent thing to do, but then that's not really the fault of the people there. I don't think anybody is going to be harmed. I think that it is about one of the only ways that it could be really a viable community and continue to do that without having horrendous, horrendous costs to all the people there. I think it's going to help. I think it will make a nice little community that's already there, but their infrastructure is in bad shape. And so I would urge you to support it and let it go ahead. I don't see it creating county pockets. I see it eliminating county pockets, which they could otherwise maybe do with the smaller numbers we have now for incorporation. But that, in my mind, makes less viable towns and communities. So I would urge you to support it.
Further discussion? Further discussion? You ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? Who made the motion? Who made the motion? Senator Meyer. Oh. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 142 do pass. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The chair is undecided. Will all those in favor please stand? Opposed? House Bill 142 has passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Peck.
I may have the privilege of the floor.
You may, sir.
Fellow senators, just distributed here is a new Chief Washakie brochure. We've had a brochure at the Capitol Rotunda, which was not of a quality befitting that of the sculpture, which graces our rotunda. And the reason I make this announcement, the staff did not want us to have to put an initial on it and deface the Washakie representation. This was presented or was prepared by Judy Sargent, who is the tour guide down there, along with her intern Scott McDonald, published through the ANI and in cooperation with the Chief Washakie Endowment. So I wanted to call it to your attention. I think it's a creditable job, and
is more in keeping with the class of the sculpture, which is graces our rotunda here in the National Rotunda and at Fort Washakie, and I call it to your attention on that account.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 143. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 143, Incorporation of Municipality Survey, sponsored by Representative Luthy, and Act Relating to Cities and Towns. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Haynes, Johnson, Meyer, Mockler, and Scott. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee to hold rise and report it do so with a do pass motion on House Bill 143. There was a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask the reading clerk read that in at this time.
House Bill 143, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to a gross copy, page 2, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the standing committee amendment to House Bill 143 and ask that further reading of the amendment be dispensed with. Mr. Chairman, I'll explain the standing committee amendment because it's just a cleanup. We just insert the word "and." It was inadvertently left out on the House side. We caught it over on the Senate side and asked for your favorable consideration.
Any discussion on the standing committee amendment? Any discussion? All those in favor of the standing committee amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Mr. Chairman,
the standing committee amendment has passed the committee, though. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the good senator from Star Valley to explain the bill.
Senator Allman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This really isn't as hard as the last one, and I don't think it has quite as much controversy as we'll have on the last one. Also, when they were doing their going through the judge, and the judge, by looking at our statutes, on the bottom of page 1, on the little I, it has have prepared an accurate survey. Well, he took the word accurate and he inserted his own ruling of saying actual. On the back on page 2, so we incorporated a little bit more language to explain that a little bit better. And it's underlined, in preparing an accurate survey map of the territory intended to be embraced within the town limits of a land surveyed, registered under the laws of Wyoming, may reference or adopt courses and distances of the boundaries of the territories from subdivision plats made by the land surveyor registered under the law of Wyoming, platted accordance to the provisions. So we're trying to explain what we mean by accurate to actual. And for those, the only ones that really would be against this are surveyors. And one surveyor apparently was against this. What it basically means is that if the judge wanted actual, you're preparing to make your municipality, then that's what he wants you to go out immediately and make up a whole new survey. Whereas most of these places, and if they need one and they don't have one already filed under in the county office, then they should have a good survey of the property being into a town. But what this one was basically saying, like in our instance, Star Valley Ranch, they do have an accurate survey in the county courthouse. It has not had anybody contesting it when they buy land. I've never heard anybody, so it's a very good survey. The difference in actual and accurate at this time, if we went for an actual one, that ranch up there would have to go over $64,000 for another survey. Whereas an accurate, that the statutes actually say, it can be down to under $10,000 to do it again, to do what they need to do and have in the process. Basically, that's what the bill is. We're just explaining that. And for people who, and it's not letting those off who do not have a good accurate under, in the courthouses. We're not letting that part off. That's still in the statutes, that they do have to have that. We're just defining that a little bit better. So if you already have an accurate survey map in the courthouse, and there hasn't seemed to be any problems or cases against it or whatever, then that should be good enough for our statutes. And I'll entertain any questions.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess just a question. I think this is an area that generates a lot of problems with communities, where what happens is that every time a surveyor does a map, he's required to file that with his county clerk. Surveying is not a science, it's more of an art. And different surveyors will go out and find different points of beginning, they'll find different landmarks and survey from that. So what I'm seeing here is what can happen is that in your situation where you have the two towns, that instead of requiring one surveyor to go out and locate the points and certify it and then do your application on that, the surveyor can go down to the county clerks and take any accurate survey that by any surveyor, it might be 100 years old, may not be reliable, and certify that as the town, and then that becomes your incorporating document, and then he, knowing at the time that that survey, although it was recorded and therefore was accurate at the time, is off base. It's significant. So now you end up with a series of litigation. It seems to me that part of what the statute was trying to intend was that the land surveyor would go out and actually make sure that the courses and distance are accurate, that he's certified to it at that time, that somebody's reviewed it, and you don't go back and look at something that was 100 years ago that may have started out, and then you don't have to actually certify those points. And while it may work in one instance, it sure seems to me that it could be a real problem if the surveyor doesn't go out and make sure that survey was in fact accurate that was recorded.
Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the surveyors of today base all their work off of the surveyors of over 100 years ago when they laid out the whole territories. And they did it by rods and chains going across the territory and laying out the corner posts. And I believe we had about a few months ago, we had a rotary presentation on this by our local land surveyor. And he showed us everything from the old transit that they used to use when they laid everything out in the chains and rods to the new GPS stuff right now. And he said the work that these people did back then is just as accurate within an inch or so of what the GPS is if you go on well over a mile. And so, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how accurate we actually have to be laying these things out, but they're going to be within that far or that far. Mr. Chairman, I think that's close enough. They don't have to be this far with the new GPS or laser survey right now. And this, Mr. Chairman, I think does everything that this original statute intended.
Senator Scott.
Further, as a practical matter, what we're talking about is not 100-year-old surveys here. What we're talking about is the surveys that are done in order to plat subdivisions, because that's what's coming in, is platted subdivisions. And that's about the only way you're going to get the density to become a city. And those are much more recent. And they're filed, they're in use. And so I don't think you get any improvement by requiring an additional survey. All you get is an additional expense for anybody that wants to incorporate a new town. So that's what this bill is, just a cost savings for anybody there, because you are dealing with modern surveys. They're used for platting the subdivisions that are trying to come in, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
Senator DiCaria.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was a surveyor for a while in a previous life. And I'd say that you could say both sides are right. It depends. If you're on the flatlands, yeah, you can. They were pretty good, you know. When they went half mile, they were pretty close. When they went through hilly country, they're not quite as good. I mean, it makes a big difference because, you know, when you're holding a chain and it's going uphill and, you know, I mean, how far is that? You know, we'd get the trig tables out and do the calculations. And, you know, sometimes yes, sometimes no, you know. In my country, Mr. Chairman, it's real interesting. We looked... during the mineral boom, we looked for a section corner, and actually there was quite a large bounty out for it for whoever could find it, because it was a marker between Utah and Wyoming, and of course with the mineral wealth, it was a pretty valuable place. We wanted to know right where the state line was, because who gets the tax revenue off of that great survey? I mean, the surveyor wrote these great notes, but, you know, I think some of them were done in a bar somewhere. You know, I don't think he was actually ever out there doing the survey, but, you know, he had great notes to back it up, because we never could find the corner. But the only problem I could see in this is if you have two surveys that aren't connected, you know, you'd need to have somebody actually go out and make sure they connect them together instead of, you know, because they may be tied to two totally different points of land, and even with some of the modern techniques, you know, you could have some error in there, and when you get that, you know, it creates problems. You know, I mean, in my community, there's a river through there, and a lot of the old surveys in the old part of the town, they go to the meander of the river. Well, guess what? That river's not where it was when they did the survey. The river's in a whole different place, and so if you go from the center line of the river, you know, your property may or may not be what you think your property was, and some of those surveys don't really tie together all that well. And so, you know, there's been a lot of surveys where they've had to go back in and just make sure that you tie them together somewhere. I mean, there's ways of putting that error into the survey and using proportional methods, but it seems to me, I mean, I don't know if you need a whole another survey, but you probably ought to have some way, if they're two separate pieces of land, to make sure you at least tie them to the same point on the earth. So, you know, that's what I all have to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I too have to express some concern too. A lot of the methods through GPS and lasers and so forth seem quite accurate now, but the good senator from Evanston's absolutely right. It's a matter of where those were tied onto, and they were tied, in many cases, were tied onto older surveys. There is not only the mountainous problem, but for instance, there is still an ongoing dispute as to exactly where the county line is between Sheridan and Campbell County. And that has not been resolved yet. And when we're talking about millions of dollars worth of coal bed methane, yes, he's absolutely right. It makes a big difference. And so I'm a little concerned about this bill myself. The particular subdivisions that are there, as the good senator from Star Valley may say, may indeed be good surveys. The problem is we're putting this is not special legislation. We're putting this in the statute book for any municipalities and any incorporation from here on.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
It's Mr.
I understand
Chairman.
What the dilemma is up there, but keep in mind that these bills apply to the whole state of Wyoming. And if they're going to be applied to some other place, they may not be as current old plat as you have up there. If you just have the one condition, then it's probably passable. But I can tell you horror stories about surveys in Campbell County, very close to home, where the lines were 1,400 feet off, and there was a difference between BLM land and private land, and we're talking millions of dollars, critical things about surveys. What I would really like to see to clean this bill up would have the sponsors bring it back with some kind of governing governing words that would ensure that the thing was accurate to some degree.
Senator Meyer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, let's don't get our eye off the ball here. I want you to go right to the language that's in the bill so we know what we're really discussing. And let's go to lines 9 and 10 on page 2. I'll go to 8. Reference and adopt courses and distances of the boundaries of the territory from subdivision plats made by a land surveyor registered under the laws of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, this isn't me going out with my transit to run irrigation ditches. This is a registered land surveyor that made the plats. All you say is that we're going to reference the work that a registered land surveyor did in the past. Now, if the last guy was registered under the laws of Wyoming, that means that he's qualified to do the job right. And we're saying you just don't have to do the job again and again and again.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking against this, in the 80s, and I think the good senator from Newcastle referenced it, they resurveyed all of northeast Wyoming. I don't remember the details, but it was BLM. There was a marker somewhere off back east, and it just put all the wells and everything else in our whole part of the state off. And they had to go back out and verify everything and move it off into this person's land and move this county line, you know, wherever it's supposed to be, of course. We're right by reaching further into that county and getting all we can, but that is what happened. So if this is over like 20 years ago in that quadrant of the state, it would be off by a considerable amount. And I've emailed some people, hopefully they'll give me the information so I know exactly what that was, but that's my memory in the great big contract that was given out that year for that.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we're been kind of talking about surveys here and maps. And one other thing, I've been noticing a map that's been posted on the back, and this may be the solution to all your problems, because that map shows all of Star Valley, most of Evanston, all of Jackson, all being in Idaho. So, you know, are surveys accurate? That depends on when you took them, I guess.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Chairman, that'll come as a third reading amendment, please.
Senator Almond.
I'm hearing, and I understand the concern. I guess what, if people are wanting to become a municipality, and I'll tell you, if one of our little towns called Bedford or Etna wanted to actually become a legal municipality, I would say that, yes, they needed to be surveyed because they've been there for a long, long time, and whoever is doing the surveying, they have different concepts in that. But a development, a lot of these new developments, they are very well platted out, and all we're doing is putting an expense on them that they probably are not going to be able to afford, and they won't be able to come. We won't have new towns because of that with some of these, and maybe that's fine with everybody. If you see fit to pass this, I would see if about putting an amendment in on second reading where we would make sure that if there is concern, I'm not even sure how that would work, but if there was some kind of concern about making sure, like I said, I'm not even sure where I'm going with this yet, but I would try to make it as an amendment to this where we can protect the concerns that have been expressed on this. But I don't think we can, you know, if you have a 800 or 1,000 home area and you're telling that they have to go out and survey the whole thing again, that's pretty hard on any community, I would think, if they want to become, and that's probably a small town that wants to become a municipality. This, if there was a lot of lawsuits or something like that, that would be something to look in to make sure that on land, and if somebody was fighting about land and where a fence line was and it's been there forever, and that happens a lot in the country part with the ranchers and that, but I would hope that you would adopt this, and like I say, I would work on that for the second reading.
Further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when this committee of the whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 143 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Okay, House Bill 143 has passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader? You've heard the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 155 do pass. House Bill 228 do pass amended. House Bill 257 do pass. House Bill 63 do pass amended. House Bill 69 do pass. House Bill 142 do pass amended, and House Bill 143 do pass amended. Senator Haynes, Chairman.
Senator Haynes.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the committee of the whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The committee of the whole report has been adopted. Reports from standing committees.
February the 17th, 2005, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 93, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Allman, Hawks, Mockler, and Peck, excuse Senator Cooper, Senator Peck, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 300, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Massey, Ross, Von Flatern, excuse Senator Cooper, Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 271, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Massey, Ross, Von Flatern, excuse Senator Cooper, Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 272, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Allman, Hawks, and Peck, no, Senator Mockler, excuse Senator Cooper, Senator Peck, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 148, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Case, Hines, Jobe, and Nicholas, Senator Hines, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 201, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Massey, Ross, Von Flatern, excuse Senator Cooper, Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 349, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Massey, Ross, Von Flatern, excuse Senator Cooper, Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 225, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Haynes, Johnson, Meyer, Mockler, and Scott, Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, House Bill 205 has an appropriation. I ask that it be referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations, please.
It is so ordered. We have some concurrences, requests. Senator Haynes, are you ready on message number 395? Senator Hawks. Colleague,
President,
Senator
I'm ready
Hawks,
on 395.
Are you ready on 395?
Mr. President, I'm ready.
Your reading clerk will read in the concurrence request.
February the 17th, 2005, from the House of Representatives, message number 395, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 60, Split Estates, Procedures for Oil and Gas Operations. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 52, noes 6, excused. One, conflict. One, the House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patty Benton, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Hawks.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate does concur with message 395, Senate File 60. That's the split estate bill, and I urge the Senate to vote yes. The House went in to the bill in a couple of places dealing with the definition of a surface owner. On the first part of their amendments, page 3, Romanet 8, is the definition section of surface owner. They felt it was too broad, that in fact it could be interpreted that, say, an outfitter with a lease for his hunting camp could claim an interest of record, a mortgage holder could claim an interest of record. So they tightened that up and then added equitable title, which would include a contract for deed, and I think that's very appropriate. In the middle of Romanet 8, we get into further tightening up the definition of surface owner by excluding certain things. And they added on to that those where it does not include. Then they get into easements, rights of way, license, mortgage, lien, mineral interest, or non-possessory interest. And that just further tightens up the definition of surface owner. Then on page 15, the middle of Romanet 3, this gives, what they did here gives the surface owner a little broader authority. The way the original language read, the surface owner could not have pledged his surface damage payments. And what this does is give the surface owner the ability to, let's say if there was a mortgage on the property and the bank demanded a pledge of the surface damage payments, this gives them the ability to do that. I think those are very appropriate amendments, and I would urge an aye vote.
The question is on that the Senate do concur on Senate File 60, and you've been asked to vote aye. Are there any discussion on the concurrence request? Seeing none, the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman? Allman?
Aye.
Barrasso?
Aye.
Boggs? Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
excused,
DiCaria, B. Geis?
Aye.
Haynes?
Aye.
Hawks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Northrup?
Aye.
Peck?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Conflict.
Conflict. Sessions?
Conflict.
Vasey?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Larson?
Aye.
Geis, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 4 noes, 1 excused, and 2 conflicts.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 60. Senator Burns, your referral, I think, was for the wrong bill. Would you recheck that?
I apologize. It's my mistake. It's House Bill 201.
House Bill 201.
But I ask you to re-refer to Appropriations Committee Number 2.
House Bill 201 will be re-referred to Appropriations. Senator Schiffer?
President, on a re-referral, we need the number and the short title. We've got to go through the full drill so it gets recorded.
You are correct. He did that once but gave the wrong number. So this is a... Would you, for clarity, will you go through it again?
Re-referral, House Bill 201, Crime Victim Service Providers Funding.
Thank you. It is re-referred. Senator Barrasso, are you ready on message number 378? The reading clerk will read message 378.
February the 16th, 2005, from the House of Representatives, message number 378, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 14, graduated driver's licenses. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 45, noes 13, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia L. Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Barrasso.
Mr. President, I move the Senate to concur on message 378, Senate File 14, graduated driver's license, and recommend you vote no. The House bill comes back with a number of changes. A headline in this morning's paper says graduated driver's license bill tinkered with, and then you get into the body of the story, and it said did a lot more tinkering Wednesday before approving the bill. It says if the Senate doesn't agree, the bill will go to committee to work out a compromise, and I think we need to go to that committee. Mr. Chairman, they've changed the number of, Mr. President, they changed the number of passengers in the bill. From 1 to 3, so there can be 4 people under the age of 18 in the car. They've added a new component about driver's ed and someone that gets a learner's permit and then waits 6 months with a learner's permit and takes driver's ed would not have to have this intermediate license. And then since this is a suspended license, anyone caught after hours or with too many in the car, there's an amendment about violators and their insurance companies. So there are just enough changes and enough tinkering that I'd rather have this go to a conference committee, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President. Thank you. I recommend a no vote.
Motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 14, and you've been asked to vote no. Discussion. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Speaker, and I guess I would urge you to vote aye on the...
President.
Thank you. I apologize. Mr. President. I urge you to vote aye. With respect to the insurance provision clause, that's a clause that we have put into several of the these offenses that deal with minors that are essentially status crimes. And what it simply means is that if you're picked up and you're charged with a crime under here, that is a crime between you and the Department of Transportation, and it's not to be sent on to the insurance companies to allow insurance companies to arbitrarily increase your rate of insurance.
We have put that provision on historically on almost all status crimes, and I think we ought to abide by that. With respect to the issue with regarding the increase of passengers, they took it from one passenger to four. What that simply does is accommodate the type of situation where you have a double dating with your parents' consent. So you have two couples that can go out. You can send out two couples that are, what you could send your two couples of same age out without having to encourage them to go with the other ages. So that's a compromise between two positions. And then finally, with respect to the 3005 amendment, that deals with the issue of whether or not you can accelerate the time in which you can get an unqualified license by having a license for 6 months and completing a driver's education course. It seems to me that once you go through the driver's education course and you've undertaken that exercise, that you ought to be trusted with a full license. Kids have been doing it successfully for many years.
Further discussion on the concurrence request. Senator Barrasso.
Mr. President, this bill says nothing about double dating with your parents' consent that I can find. I view this as four teenage boys who are 16 driving around together. The other issue of the intermediate permit, and I've read this, I read the article, and then I went and talked to our lawyers, because a reporter reading this bill and reading these amendments reads it differently than I read it, and that's why I went to the lawyer. So I think this specific issue of this 6 months and driver's ed is not as clear cut as as different people may interpret that, and I'd like to have an opportunity to visit with a conference committee on that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. The motion is that the Senate do concur. We made that once, but we'll do it again. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 14, and you have been asked to vote no. The Chief Clerk will call a roll.
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
No.
Barrasso?
No.
Boggs?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case? Coe?
No.
Cooper? Excused. DeCaria?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Haynes?
No.
Hawks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Northrup?
Aye.
Peck?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer? Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Larson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 8 ayes, 21 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 14. Senator Scott, are you ready on message 372?
Yes, Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read in message 372.
February the 16th, 2005. From the House of Representatives, message number 372, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 80, Unemployment Compensation Amendments. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia L. Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move we do concur with House amendments to Senate File 80, and very reluctantly I ask you to vote no. Mr. President, this is the unemployment compensation bill, and on these unemployment bills, you have to be very careful of federal conformance issues, because if you get out of conformity, your employers all over the state face horrendous consequences. They get stuck with the full federal unemployment tax as well as our state unemployment tax, and if that were to happen, we'd be down here suddenly. Fix it. And unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, what the House was doing as a matter of substance is just fine. they were making sure that the constitutional provisions that we've talked about regarding fines going to common school fund were properly implemented. But they managed to put a drafting error in here, and in the report on the page 3, line 14 reference, it says the fine under this section, it should read the fine under this paragraph. The consequence of doing it under this section is that it could be interpreted as catching the increased rates that employers who violate these things wind up paying. The feds require those increased rates go into the UI fund. We'd be out of conformance, and the consequences would be horrendous. So it's an easy thing to fix, Mr. President, but I think we better vote no, go to conference, and fix it.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 80, and you've been asked to vote no. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
No.
Barrasso?
No.
Boggs?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper excused. DiCaria?
No.
Geis?
No.
Haynes?
No.
Hawks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Northrup?
No.
Peck?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Larson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 29 noes. One excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 80. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move the Senate be adjourned until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow. 9:30.
Announcements. Senator Cole.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education. We'll meet right over here in room S11 at 7:30 tomorrow morning. We take up House Bill 185. Can't remember what that's about. I think teacher salaries is the content of that bill.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, your committee number 7, Elect Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions will meet Tuesday the 22nd at 8 a.m. in S19 to consider the following bills. House Bill 316, engrossed, Libraries Amendments. House Bill 270, engrossed, Public Records Management. House Bill 222, Indian Gaming Compact Authority to Negotiate.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the committee room. Consider the following bills. House Bill 114, Pharmacists. House Bill 340, Mental Health and Substance Abuse Systems. House Bill 223, Suicide Prevention. And House Bill 258, Telepharmacies. And Mr. President, we may have to, in view of the most recent announcement, we may have to continue at the noon hour if we can. And we will shuffle the deck to accommodate House sponsors.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, subject to change at the whim and the winds of the minority floor leader, my intent is to at least start shutting this outfit down at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. For those of you who are making travel plans, you can probably count on being all down and somewhere between 3 and 3:30, but I'll shut down committee of the whole at 3.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 9 a.m., Room 204, to take up House Bill 329, Engrossed, Executive Training Institute Graduate School of Business, and House Bill 338, Department of Health Review. So, urge everybody to be there right on time. We'll start immediately at 9 a.m.
Senator Hawks.
Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet at noon recess tomorrow to consider House Bill 346 engrossed. That's the Wyoming Enterprise Fund.
Any further announcements? I'd like to remind everybody that the Governor's Prayer Breakfast is tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. at Little America. Any further announcements? The motion is that the Senate be adjourned until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate is adjourned until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.